Hey, Barbara.
Yes, Brooks.
I'm on the phone with Charles and he's trying to
Hello.
get in. Is he in the participant group and you can allow him to shift over?
Am looking
Hello.
right now. I do see Mr. Minnery is in as attendee, so I'm allowing him to s I've unmuted him.
She's checking on it now.
Also, I see Scott Duffield is also in the attendee room.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's fine, Barbara. He belongs in the attendee room. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Was confusing Mr. Newton.
So, Bob, are we ready?
One moment, Mr. President Adams.
I'm not seeing Charles in the attendees.
Okay, so say that again, Charles. What are you seeing on your end?
And Barbara, I do see Mr. Newton in the attendee room now.
Depends. Duffield. No. Yes.
Okay, Cheryl or Barbara, can you guys send Charles another link?
I'll be happy to. One moment, please.
Okay, Charles, she's sending it to you right now.
There you are. Okay, got it.
And Jeff, Mr. Minnery, I just want to
My
make
bad.
sure that you're working. Can you, are you able to unmute yourself?
Oh, yes, I'm unmuting myself. Did that work?
Yes. Perfect.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
And President Enns,
Yes.
Mr. Pashan. Notified us he's going to be a little bit late, but he will be joining the meeting.
Okay, we'll expect him. And are we ready to start or was the waiting for Bob? AGP.
No, AGP is good. We're waiting for Mr. Burbo. I just sent him another link.
He's in.
He's in. Okay.
You see his name up there. All right, I guess then we can start. This is the IWMA board meeting, February 10th, 2021. And Cheryl, if you'll do the roll call, please.
Absolutely. Mr. Enns, as Brooks said, Mr. Pichon is going to be late. We've also been notified that Andy Pease, the alternate for Jen Marks, will be serving in her stead today. Roll call, Ms. Arnold.
I'm here.
Mr. Burbeau.
Here.
Ms. Bright.
Here.
Ms. Compton.
Here.
Mr. Gibson.
Here.
Mr. Hammond.
Here.
Mr. Heller.
Here.
Mr. Newton.
Here.
Ms. Ortiz-Legge.
Here.
Ms. Pease.
Here.
Mr. Storton.
Here.
President Enns.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Cheryl. With that, I think what we'll do is have Jeff Heller lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think the protocol is to mute and have Jeff lead us, and you can speak along quietly.
Okay, are we ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you, Jeff. With that, I'll open the meeting to public comment for items not on the agenda. Barbara, do we have anyone wishing to speak?
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may select the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may hit star 9. And again, this is for items not on the agenda. I do not have anybody wishing to make public comment.
Very good. Thank you, Barbara. With that, we'll go to item number 5, Executive Director's Report. Brooks.
Thank you, President Enns. Just one little clarification we want to make regarding attending these Zoom meetings. And I think there's been some confusion. So hopefully this clarifies it. So, but just look at these slides and tell me if you think this will work for everybody. What we've been sending out to the public is this image here on the left. So it looks like the agenda itself, and they can access that link and it brings them into the meeting, but it brings them in as an attendee, not a participant. So they can't mute and unmute themselves and participate the way a board member can. The board members, you're receiving something that looks more like this, or this is what we're going to send you. And there's going to be two links on the page. The first one is your specific link that allows you to be a participant in the meeting. And then the second thing on that page is going to be an actual link to the agenda packet. And so this would replace the email notification that we send out from MailChimp. And it would just be sent to you following the executive committee meeting once they approve the agenda. And if you already have saved these to your calendar, it's the same link. But what we would send you is, say, the executive committee meeting is on Wednesday. On Thursday, we would send you this link, and it'd have your Zoom link to the meeting and the agenda both at one time. And then the agenda, when you click on that link, it looks like this. But if you click download packet in the upper left-hand corner, it will bring up the actual agenda just like you see it when it's printed. Or if you just want to follow along, you can click each item as we go along. So I guess you can communicate with me individually, but does this look like a format that would work for everybody? We just send you a link 7 days before, and it has the two things you need to get into the meeting and see the agenda.
It's good to me, Brooks.
Brooks, yeah, this is a great idea. Well done.
Okay. Thank you. Cheryl's been working on this a lot. And if you have any problems, let us know. If it doesn't work for you, let us know. So we'll send out that in the future following executive committee meetings. Okay. And you have in your packet, and if anything comes up here, just stop me. But you have in your packet the credit card and expenditures report. And if you ever have any questions about that, let me know. The project manager position that was approved last month to help us with SB 1383, the position was already advertised for 2 weeks and closed on the 5th. And we've had several qualified people weigh in. So we're still interviewing those. Hopefully by the next meeting, we'll have somebody here working for us. And I do want to point out some of the building issues and something we've got in the budget and something we need to look at for additional office space. The current office we're in is about 100 years old. And you can see from these pictures, there's some structural damage to the exterior. There's some interior too, and I didn't include those, but you can see some cracking and separation that's occurred over the years, and it's been repaired various times. But the bottom line is, when I looked up what foundation issues might be, we had all the indicators in the building. And so as we're looking at adding staff for SB 1383, and we don't know exactly which way to go yet. It may be cheaper to repair this building. It might be cheaper to lease this building or sell it and move into a new place, or try to lease additional offices nearby and keep this building as the storefront, so to speak. But we'll look into all those options and try to give you the best one to consider. But we do have in the budget to investigate whether this building is just cosmetic or it needs additional significant repair.
Brooks, question. How much walk-in traffic do we actually get to the office?
Just a few people, probably a few people a day on a typical day.
Right. Okay. I just was wondering if you had a whole lot or just a few like that. So
no, it's not. It's pretty much every day, but it's not a whole lot.
I know that we bought this building a while back. It was a great, I think, investment in the agency to do that, but I mean, if we did want to sell it, it would be a very logical location for a lawyer or somebody like that close to the courthouse that we could probably get our money back out of it for sure. But let's probably do a little more research and get some more options moving forward.
Absolutely. I appreciate those comments. We want to look at all the options and we will give them to you. And you're going to make the final decision on this because I know it's going to be $1 million decision. So we definitely want your input on it. Okay. And then we want to talk about a few items that you don't really need to comment today. We just kind of want you to hear these of some items that are in the budget or that we're anticipating will be in the budget. And then you're going to have time to comment on these. We'll have the budget presented to you in March or April, but you don't need to approve it until May or June. So this is just kind of those items that you have flexibility to approve or not approve. So we just kind of run these by you today. If you do have a comment, let us know. But we're thinking we will get at least one, if not two, requests from the county. One is for the Blue Bag Partnership, which we approached about a year ago to help homeless encampments kind of clean themselves up and provide that service. And we're anticipating that the county will ask for a funding request. And so we've reached out to them to let them know that our budget's coming up and they're going to give us a formal proposal. We've reminded them that it would just be funding and no staff or no other resources. And the $150,000, I don't know. That's my placeholder where I think they'll probably be. Also from the county, Central Coast Partners for Water Quality is a state-mandated program, from what I understand, regarding water. And they had a social media campaign that we had mostly funded for them. And I don't know if that contract ended. I don't know if they'll bring that back, but it's potential. We have some outreach through EcoSlow, through social media and some webinars. They're actually hosting one, I think, in the next few weeks for us. But that gets us tens of thousands of hits on social media. And then we belong to several professional associations and have some memberships that helps us keep our certifications up professionally. And it gives us keeps us connected to the legislation and the networking throughout solid waste and recycling in the state. We've also got in there another round of TAG grants annually. Also, we provide support, direct support to some of the haulers and landfills for electronic waste recycling. And that's about $50,000. It is direct payments, but it does promote the diversion of that material. We anticipate capital of about $300,000. Some of it is deferred maintenance on the HHW facilities, but there's also will be a request for a new HHW site in San Miguel. The nearest site to them is probably is roughly 17 to 20 miles away, depending on which one they go to. And they are willing to staff it themselves. So we just have to put in the concrete pad, the lockers and the fencing, et cetera. And then they would staff it. So it could be a really efficient site and be useful for that area. And then I just mentioned the building and office inspection. This is just to have somebody investigate and climb underneath it and make sure it looks okay and it's not anything significant, or let us know if it is. And that's, we're estimating $30,000. So any questions on these specific items, which again, these will be part of the bigger budget that we show in the next month or so.
Yeah, Brooks, just one comment on the inspection costs for the building.
Yes, sir.
I know it's not a formal budget presentation, but that seems pretty steep for inspecting the building, but I'll just throw that out there for now.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I didn't contact anybody yet. I was just thinking we'd have to have an engineer or an architect or somebody of that caliber look at it, but we can do a little RFP or something for that. Okay, and then to talk about the upcoming 1383 expenses.
Hello?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Karen Bright here. I had my hand raised. I don't know if maybe it's just not showing up. I'm not sure.
No, it did. I'm sorry, I didn't notice it.
Oh, thank you. Could you just talk a little bit more about the HHW portion, please?
Sure. The town of San Miguel, or that unincorporated area up there, does not have any place to go with the household hazardous waste. It's probably the most remote area with the largest number of citizens that are not provided direct service like the other areas of the county. And this could be a really good idea to have something for them to use and not have to drive, which means it will help prevent illegal dumping and illegal disposal. And the fact that they're willing to staff it would save us, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and then back to 1383 expenses. We're estimating about $400,000 in this current year for mostly the consulting and the legal aspect, because there's so much legal work to be done on the franchises and the ordinances and the negotiations with your haulers. But then after that, we anticipate about $1 million a year. And you had seen the prior estimates between 6-something and 9-something. We're just trying to be conservative. It may come in less, but there's a lot of questions that have to be answered and a lot of participation from the board, the jurisdictions, and from the haulers of who's, you know, the activities have to occur. It's just whether they're going to be in our budget, the jurisdiction's budget, or the solid waste budget of the hauler. And then you pay through it through that mechanism. So we're choosing to give you the most conservative or higher estimate at this point. But it looks like in the future, we'll need a rate increase of approximately $1 million, or that's what I'd be prepared for. So any questions about that? Again, these are just rough numbers at this point. We're going to refine this over the next few months.
Brooks, Hammond question. You're saying $1 million. Now, exactly, can you break that down generally and what that's going to be for the IWMA as far as cost? I mean, why are you thinking it's going to be $1 million for the agency?
Yeah, we will break that down for you next month.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have the more detailed.
That seemed awful high for just a small agency to be able to do that. But especially, though, you're saying that a lot of those costs could be put back onto the different member agencies to absorb.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
These activities need to occur. We just don't know whether they would be done through IWMA and we would pay for it, or your city would pay for it, or your hauler would pay for it, and they're going to bill you through your franchise fee or your collection cost. Okay, and then the next question is, when would the rate increase to capture, whether it's 650 or 950, depending on where it is, when do we run out of money? And we don't know that exactly yet, but you can just see there, when we get to the end of FY21-22, we would be in the red. So we're recommending, again, to be conservative and not run out of money, that we will probably need a rate increase next January. So it'd be about 10 months from now. So we would, again, try to refine these costs over the next few months and let you know what that rate increase would be. And, so again, we believe it's coming. And then to put that in perspective of our fees versus what is being charged locally, these are the current franchise fees from the different jurisdictions. As you can see, it's mostly about 10%. And the IWMA charges a mixture of fees under our current resolution. We charge 2% of the commercial hauling. We charge 30 cents a month for each residential account, which is about 1% to the resident. And then the landfills charge $3 a ton for all waste that is disposed of at the landfill, which brings us to about $2.2 million a year. So our fees are relatively low compared to the other franchise fees, but they, again, we project that they will go up. So again, we're going to go into more detail on this, but if you have any questions now, please ask.
Brooks, Hammond again. I'm at a ski lodge actually going and doing this. I'm looking this on my phone. I don't see Paso Robles as a location on here, or maybe it's not on my screen.
I think you're correct. I don't see Paso in there either. County of Slo should have several unincorporated areas. Oh, They've got seven franchise districts.
Okay.
Patty, do you know if we had Paso Robles or we didn't have it yet by the time I put this slide together? We're still pulling this information together. This is, again, it's just the concept of generally the franchise fees are about 10% and IWMA is at 1% to 2%.
Right. That's what I remember too, but I just was wondering, and San Luis City has three different charges there?
Correct. They have a separate franchise for garbage, for recycling, and for green waste.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
Okay, and if there are no more questions about that, I'll turn the oral report over to Rob Hilton and HF&H to talk about our strategic plan.
Good afternoon, board. Brooks asked me to come today to give you a quick update on where we are and what you can expect on the strategic plan. So your board approved unanimously the strategic plan elements at the last meeting. And so we've been feverishly working on getting all of the strategic plan action plans written up around those 39 strategic plan elements. We've had a couple of conversations with Brooks and Patty and Jeff about some of those and how they'll play out. And we're anticipating delivering those to staff by the end of this month. So they'll have the action plans, they'll have the staffing plan, and they'll have our recommendations about sort of how to fund and resource this, which has a bit of a nexus into the discussion that Rose from R3 will have later today on the audit that y'all had. And Brooks just sort of recapped, you know, you get these three different funding sources to fund the activities of the agency. Our recommendation going forward is that you fund these SB 1383 costs through that percentage of gross receipts, that 2% mechanism that you receive now. We would recommend that you adjust that mechanism as opposed to the other two to get the revenues that you need for your operations at the IWMA. Doing it in that way has a bit better equity across the service area so that sort of no matter where you are, that percentage adjustment will be similar to all ratepayers. So from a messaging perspective and an equity perspective, I think that will help us. It's also a relatively easier thing to audit gross receipts than it is tonnage or accounts in some cases. And so we think this is a simpler method going forward. Again, as Brooks said, we'll break down that $650,000 to $950,000 estimate that we came up with for your annual cost of 1383 implementation. And we'll work with Brooks and Patty on any additional costs or program features that need to be included in that as we share the draft with them. So all of that to say, strategic plan action plans should be to staff by the end of this month. And we're already underway, I know, on a lot of that stuff. So I'm available for any questions y'all may have on that.
Rob, question from Hammond. What kind of percentage do you think then will equate? I mean, we're at 2% right now. What do you think we'll end up seeing? Another point, or what do you think?
I think it's less than that. That's about right, but it's probably a hair less than that. Order of magnitude, though, I think probably in your head, thinking a 1 percentage point increase is probably about right.
Right. Yeah, I kind of agree. That's what I think one of the assets of IWMA would be, is that all of our different city agencies can rely on the IWMA to make things happen. And that's the value I see in the whole thing. So, all right. Thank you.
Any other board questions of Rob? Brooks, back to you.
All right. Thank you, sir. That concludes the oral report, and we are to consent agenda.
Okay. Let me first see if there are no board comments. Are there any public comments on the executive director's report? Barbara?
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may select the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may hit *9. Okay, I do have one. It looks like I do have two. So we're going to go with Matt first. And give me 1 second, Matt. Okay, Matt, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Yes, hello, this is Matt Nolson at Colt Canyon Landfill. I just had a question about one of the slides talked about $50,000 funding for e-waste assistance. And I had asked about that in the past. I thought that I was told that there wasn't any assistance available. So if there is assistance for e-waste, can somebody please reach out to me and let me know what that entails and how we go about that?
Okay, is that all, Matt? Thank you. And Brooks, you made a note on that. You'll get back to Matt. And Barbara, you have one other person?
I have a caller on the phone. Caller, if you wish to unmute yourself, you need to hit star six.
This is Aaron with San Miguel Garbage Company. And my question was, or my comment is on gross receipts and for the hauler. And I know that it's going to be later in the R3 audit as well, but I want to make sure that we're clear and focused on gross receipts, paying that 2% or whatever the increase is based on the revenue that we receive, or is it on the amount that we're billing? And I'd like to see it on the revenue that we receive. And later in the agenda, it's on the R3 as well, but it's a little bit contradictory. But I wanted to just bring that up since the consultant also was talking about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. And we have no one else, Barbara?
There is nobody else with their hand raised.
Okay, I'll close public comment then, and we'll go to the next item, consent agenda, and ask for any public comment on the consent agenda. Barbara?
Yes. I'm not seeing any hands raised for consent agenda.
Okay, then I'll close public comment and bring it to the board. Anyone wishing to discuss any of these items individually may indicate so at this time. Items 6, 7, and 8. Seeing none, the motion would be in order for approval of the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, Hammond would make an order of consent to 6, 7, and 8.
Compton, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any board comment? Cheryl, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Miss Compton?
Yes.
Miss Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Miss Bright?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legg?
Aye.
Ms. Pease?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
President Enns?
Yes.
We have a motion passing unanimously, President Enns.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl. With that, we'll go to public comment on the regular agenda items, and we'll take those individually as we go through the agenda, unless someone would like to speak in general about all of them at this time.
So at this time, if you have public comment for all of the items on regular agenda, you may raise your hand or press star 9. I have no hands raised.
Thank you, Barbara. With that, we'll take item number 9, Sheila Blake service recognition resolution, and I'll turn that over to Brooks.
Thank you, President Enns. Sheila, I don't know if, do you have your camera on?
Yes.
Okay, can you hold up the plaque? I'm sorry, I forgot to take a picture of it, so I couldn't show anybody.
Okay, now I promised Cheryl that I would not look in the shopping bag until she told me to. And so I have everything right here on my desk. And what am I looking for?
It should be a nice little recycled wood plaque for your wall.
Okay, stand
go
by.
Right there nicely behind you.
Is this it?
Yes.
There it is. That's a piece of fencing from North County recycled just for you.
Thank you very much.
And
thank
we also you sent much. You some, we sent you some cowboy cookies. Were they good?
I've eaten one so far. They're really good. Thank you.
You're welcome. And President Enns, would anybody else like to make a comment?
Well, you made a comment, Brooks, about earlier this afternoon about Sheila's comment about going to a board meeting in person and getting cookies. I thought you'd like to repeat that.
Well, and thanks I for putting
also,
me on that.
I also got a resolution.
Yes.
And it looks like it's on recycled paper.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Handmade right here in the county.
Thank you very much. This may be the only pleasant part of the meeting that we are all attending. I sure wish you luck in the rest of the meeting.
Brooks, did you want to repeat her comment about going to a board meeting for cookies?
Well, she just said she missed being able to come to the meetings in person and being able to get a cookie every week.
So we see her cookies.
Oh, it was a long time ago. If you all remember what it all started out as, it has morphed into something entirely different.
Well, Sheila, I'd like to thank you personally. I was never quite certain if Sheila was really stating her opinion or teasing the board with her wit and humor. But she had a way of capturing my attention and never being boring. So thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Mr. Enns. But I wish you all luck. I wish you all luck. I know you'll do whatever you possibly can to get past this terrible problem we have with all of this trash that we're trying to find a place to hide, and there's just no place to hide anymore.
Okay, anyone else wishing to comment?
I wish I was serving with you, Sheila, but, you know, and I don't have as good a sense of humor as you, but thank you for all that you've done for the IWMA and just... we'll do the best we can today and onward.
Thanks. And good luck to you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sheila. Any other board comments?
Thank you, Sheila, and best of luck to you as well.
Thanks, Charles.
Karen Bright here. Sheila, I'm going to miss you. So, anywho, good luck to you, and thanks for all the everything you've done.
Can I jump in?
Sure, please do.
Hi, Sheila. I'm going to miss sitting next to you. Enjoy your retirement with all your animals now.
I'm fine. I'm not going out, you know, on a flaming barge into the middle of the ocean and never being seen again. I'll be at all the other meetings that I have to be at. So you're not getting rid of me entirely. But thanks for your thoughts.
And Sheila, this is Keith. I just want to jump in real quick. I want to say thank you. You were one of the first people I met when I started on this board a couple of years back. Yeah. And you were hilarious. Some of the side comments you would make when, you know, we had some downtime, I really appreciate. And I would just want to thank you for having such a great personality to work with.
Thank you.
Okay. If there are no other board comments, we'll close item 9, and we'll take up item 10. And I'd like to comment that we received over 100 letters submitted supporting the styrofoam ban. We have over 100 people that made written comments. Um, I will take public comment after the presentation by staff and let the board, let the public know that the board has received their letters from the 100 people and has had time to look at them and will be able to make comments on them. I will ask the public to not repeat comments that they've already submitted or comments other speakers have given. If there's a large number of public wishing to make comments, then I may require that we reduce the time to 1 minute. If each person of the 100 had 3 minutes, we'd be here for about 5 hours. So with that, I think we got the message. The board has been able to look at your comments. And with that, I'll turn this over to Brooks to get us started on item 10.
Thank you, President Enns. We'd like to begin with a clarification on option 3 from our attorney, Jeff Minery.
Thank you, President Enns, members of the board. I know Brooks is going to give you this presentation and he will outline 3 options. And I apologize that I should have fixed option 3 and made it clear as far as what type of motion would be needed. Option 3 does involve the potential consideration of repealing the polystyrene ordinance. And in order to repeal an ordinance, you need another ordinance. So if your board determines to move forward and consider repealing the polystyrene ordinance, the proper motion would be to direct staff to bring forward and introduce a new ordinance repealing the polystyrene ordinance and setting a hearing date. So if we get to that, you need me to state that again, I will. But again, it's to introducing a new ordinance is the correct procedure if that is the pleasure of the board.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. And back to you, Brooks.
Okay, just want to give you a little background on the ordinance, where it began and where we are with it. So in November of 2019, the board approved the ordinance to be effective 6 months later in April of 2020. And then COVID hit and the recession and the impact of small businesses was anticipated. So the board postponed it for 1 year until April of 2021. And since then, the board decided to comply with mandates only. So we thought it in the best interest of everyone concerned to bring it back to the board. And so to understand this ordinance, recognize that it is not just expanded polystyrene, or it doesn't just apply to styrofoam. It applies to plastics number 6, which is the symbol to the right of the screen there. And it did not just apply to food containers, it went a little bit further. So I just wanted to compare and contrast where our ordinance was with relative to the other jurisdictions that had passed a similar ordinance to recognize why we've requested, if we go with option 1, why we would need more money and time while we're working on SB 1383. So the ordinance that was approved by 5 cities prior to IWMA's applied to expanded polystyrene, which is typically known as styrofoam. And it was limited to restaurants and food providers and the food and drink containers. And there were 3 alternatives listed, including compostable products. And it exempted any food that was prepared or packaged outside the jurisdiction and included exempting meat trays. And we understand that the city of AG adopted our ordinance after this, but originally the 5 cities adopted this in 2016, 2017. And then IWMA adopted a different version in 2019, like we said, and it applies to all plastics number 6. And it was not limited to restaurants and food providers, but went further to stores or businesses and nonprofits, all churches and civic groups. So it's a much broader audience that we would have to educate and contact. And it included not just food and beverage containers, but the plethora of single-use items, including packing peanuts and straws. And that eliminated the compostable option. And then it did not exempt foods prepared outside the jurisdictions or meat trays, but applies to any polystyrene disposable food container from any store or business. So it's much more extensive and much more comprehensive regarding the outreach and education effort that would be required. And I also want to mention that given option two, that there's a potential for state legislation that would fix the plastics issue in general, because recognize that many plastics are not recycled, not just plastic number six. And so in 2020, last year, AB 793 passed, and it applied to beverage containers, which are pretty much plastics one and two, that they be made of recycled content. And all of these are a phased in approach because this is a multi-billion dollar industry in California, and the industry needs time to adapt. SB 54 was introduced last year, but did not pass as written, but it is back again already for 2021. And it includes plastics, including single-use packaging. So it goes a little bit further than just food containers. And again, it's a phased-in approach of making this material be recyclable. There's also a ballot initiative that's already got the signatures and ready to go. It's on for 2022. It might be bumped up to 2021, but it's going to reduce by 25% the single-use packaging, including foodware, which is what our local ordinance was originally focused on, and then ensure that it's recyclable, reusable by 2030, and it will prohibit polystyrene food containers. And then yesterday, there was another bill introduced that concerns the labeling. Any product that has the recycling triangle on it but is not deemed recyclable by the state would be banned over time as well. So we don't know when these would be passed, but we believe that all of these, that's the direction it's heading. And there's, to me, professionally, I think the idea of standardizing plastic and making that standardized plastic be contained or made of other recycled plastic is the, will phase out plastics like polystyrene, and we will end up with a much better overall non-issue with plastic moving forward. And so with that, I'll bring it back to the board for questions and comments and discussion on the options.
President Ans, it's Debbie. May I ask a question of Brooks?
Please do.
So Brooks, we passed through your slides, but on the one of them that you were trying to show us all that our ordinance contained, it looked like meat containers was crossed off the bottom of that slide. Like,
yes, I'm sorry if that's confusing. It was crossed off. It is not exempted. So it would be, those would have to, if they're made of polystyrene, they would have to go away as well.
And those are the meat containers like in the grocery store that our meat sits in. So yes, the way I remember when we were first discussing it, that the issues that arose, and for the most part, it was after it was passed and people realized it was passing or just passed, that we had, I believe we had the poultry industry contact us here locally saying that it was going to be very difficult because where most of the supply chain comes from, they wouldn't be able to revamp their packaging to accommodate our county very quickly. That was in the future for them, but in other words, we may be jeopardizing the ability. You're saying that it's coming from outside, but they still had some meat must be packaged, like it comes bulk and gets packaged as it gets here or something. There was something about that may have issues. They may have issues. And then the other one I remember is some of the wine industry folks that package for our wine to go out of this county, which we know now that we're a kind of a world renowned wine producing spot, and our wine industry depends on a lot of the opportunity to ship to a lot of places, ship from here to other places, and that they were going to be affected with what they could and could not use for packaging. Am I remembering all that right?
You're correct. We got inquiries from both of those industries, and it was my general understanding that they would have applied or would have to apply for at least an exemption for 1 year.
Okay. I was just trying to remember how we kind of learned after the fact how our county would be affected in some ways with this. So the line through the meat packaging deal, that was just a line. It still affects our packaging on the meat.
Yes, if it's packaged outside the county, it still applies. It would be banned.
Chair Ann's Hammond question for Brooks.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, Brooks, if we again were to take option three, where we're going to repeal our current ordinance, Jeff was speaking of bringing back another ordinance. Why would we need to do that? Because the way I understand it and recall that member agency already had, most all of them anyway, had ordinances already within their jurisdiction. So why would IWMA have to come back? Maybe a question for Jeff. I'm not sure.
President Enns?
Yes, Jeff, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, it's because it takes an ordinance to repeal an ordinance. So essentially what we would need to do is bring back an ordinance. Just the ordinance would be just to repeal the polystyrene. So this would not be the first time you'd hear it. You wouldn't make a final decision today. We would just bring back the ordinance to repeal the polystyrene ordinance, and it would have the public hearing component as well. The point is, you can't use a lesser motion to cancel an ordinance that is considered a higher version of legislation.
Understood, Jeff. So basically, we do that, get that in motion next meeting. Take public comment on it, and then, of course, vote on that to rescind. And then at that point, our JPA was an agreement that we would bring forth ordinances that were state mandated. And it sounds like from what Brooks was just showing us there that there are several coming, but they are not here currently. So that would be, I think, in keeping with what we had planned to do with the IWMA currently, that would be, I think, the path that I would think we'd have to go. But maybe Brooks can expand.
Yes, Councilwoman Pease has a question also, but I just address that and say that, yes, we don't know when these will happen, but we just see the trend occurring. And you know, there's 500 solid waste regulations already, and we see plastic standardization being the next issue that will be coming. We just don't know when it will pass.
I also have a question too, when you're ready.
Okay, well, Andy Pease had her hand up there.
Thank you so much. My question in terms of considering options, it seems when you put up the side-by-side of the what the cities have already put into place and then what the current ordinance is that that it seems that there's a potential of one of the options being to scale back if needed, if there is a motion, if there is interest in not being able to implement the full ordinance, which was already passed. If there's concerns about that perhaps implementing the kind of the parallel to what the five different cities have already passed. And my question is kind of what would be the process for that? Would that be an amendment to, so the motion would be direct staff to amend to align, or would you rescind and do a new one? Or is there even a implement this part now and delay the next part? You know, do the expanded polystyrene on schedule now in April and then have the other part delayed? Can you just maybe talk me through the process of those kinds of options, please?
Mr. Minery, would you mind giving more detail on that?
Yes, absolutely. An amendment to the existing ordinance would also take another ordinance. I looked it up because I forgot the name of the old rule. It's called the Rule of Equal Dignities. So you have, once you've passed an ordinance, you have to give amendments or changes to it the same equal dignity as the first one. So amendments are possible, and it could be possible that bring back to your board simply an item that would be to amend and or repeal the ordinance to give the board that those types of discussion points, certainly.
Thank you.
Okay, I believe I see Jeff. I see your hand up, but Dawn Ortiz Leg had a question.
Yeah, it was on that same vein. Is that so? Because I really appreciate the demonstration, Brooks, on the expansiveness of number six and what that means. And of course, what Ms. Arnold said is exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of pieces here that we know that would be incredibly challenging to our industries and businesses. And it seems that the feedback that comes in from the constituents is that the clamshells and the cups are really the primary driver for the outcry necessary because it's such a devastating material and so prevalent that that's something that, again, as Ms. P said, you know, already is being implemented at the city level, that if we could just bring it down to that to start considering that the mandates that you have put forth already in regards to state mandates only, as well as the fact that things are coming forth. The timing, though, we don't know. But manageably, cups and clamshells are drivers of this plight. And if what it would take just to have that and try to address this. Again, just an amendment, or can you just put a new rule and push the current ordinance out? Any other options there, please?
All right, thank you, Dawn. Jeff, I think you were next. Jeff,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Brooks, the question I have about option one is, I see you've estimated an implementation cost of $105,000. Given the fact that this is a complex educational piece in general, recycling and what recycling goes where and what products we can use and not use, et cetera. Is it really necessary, if we approve the ordinance, to do an outreach? Little Morro Bay, we pass ordinances all the time. We don't do outreach. And I'm not so sure that we should be spending money on outreach, frankly. Couldn't we just approve the ordinance, post it to the website, and move on?
I believe you could, but I don't think you would get compliance. And I think if we just sent out a letter for, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 to every church and every food distributor and every retailer that carries these products, you know, you would still see the material and it would still be questionable why we have it if we're not going to actually educate and enforce on it. But that's my opinion. And I should have said this at the beginning. We'll be glad to implement whichever option you tell us. We'll be happy to do it. We just think in order to roll it out properly, we need to actually help businesses understand it. And there's going to be thousands of these businesses that will need help and one-on-one, many of them, especially with filing an exemption or finding alternative products. So again, this is about a year and a half of effort. This is not per year. This is a one-time year and a half cost. And okay. Sorry, Don, did we not officially answer your question? But I think Jeff Minery's point was that no matter what we do, if we amend this, it'll have to be a whole new ordinance.
Okay. Thanks, Brooks.
Okay. Correct. I believe Lynn Compton, I believe you were next.
Okay. I think this is maybe a Jeff question. So when we voted, and I guess Brooks, maybe there, I do know there are no new people on this board that were not around, I think, for the vote on adopting state mandates. And I know you mentioned it in your presentation, but maybe you should give a little background for the benefit of those people that were not on the board. Because if I understood it correctly, there was substantial discussion about disbanding the IWMA, and whether we were going to go with just state mandates or not. So let's just say whatever option we choose today, aren't two out of those three options going above and beyond state mandates? So are we when we voted to move forward as a group, and I think it was a unanimous vote. Was it not a unanimous vote to adopt state mandates, or maybe there was one dissenter? I can't remember. It was pretty close.
It was 11 to 1.
Okay, so there's one dissenter. So we voted as a group, okay, we're going to go forward. We're not going to disband, and we're just going to adopt state mandates. So if everything now comes back before this board, and we're going to vote, do we want to do this A, B, or C option? And two of the options are above state mandates. Aren't we just negating the vote that we had to band together? And I think that for the benefit of those members that were not here when that very in-depth discussion and decision-making process came forward, maybe you should shed a little bit of light on that. Because I think whatever decision we make today, if it is to, or not even this issue, if there's some other issue that comes before us, and that issue is to do whatever you want to mandate we do that's above and beyond the state mandates, that's going contrary, is it not, to our vote to just adopt state mandates? And then do we have this same discussion all over again? Are we just going to do state mandates or not? So maybe legally that question could be answered. And then Brooks, maybe you could give an update, because I think there are some people here that don't know how we arrived upon that decision and why we arrived upon it. And I think that they should know that before they make a decision on this.
Okay, Mr. Minery, do you mind if I answer first?
I think it would be appropriate, yes.
Okay, yes, so in November, well, we had spent about 9 months working on the strategic plan, and the biggest issue that the board had to determine is whether its mission was to meet state mandates as an agency and allow local control, or expand that onto all control. And so we reviewed the founding documents of the JPA and the language in that document, and it appeared to be overwhelmingly apparent that all the members joined and formed the IWMA back in 1994 to meet state mandates efficiently and to allow for local jurisdiction control. So in other words, your franchise agreements and your hauler agreements and your disposal agreements and your ordinance capability for things that aren't mandated would rest at your local jurisdiction, and IWMA's function would be to meet state mandates. And so it was a very contentious issue, and I was very worried that the board would, any member can leave the agency with 30 days notice. So it's not mandatory that you be a member, and that would affect the survival of the entire JPA. And with 1383 looming, we brought it back to the board in November, reviewed the language, and reviewed the outcomes of potential separation. And the board voted 11 to 1 to stay together and meet mandates only. The rub I had with this was this ordinance was passed prior to the board giving us that formal direction. And so that's why I thought it should come back to the board. And Jeff, if you have any comments to make, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, President Ahnes. And yes. I don't know how much this is a legal question in regards to the fact that your board made a strategic, you made a decision to go mandates only to pursue a strategic plan and essentially to unify the agency. I don't know that adopting a change is necessarily against that direction, in that the polystyrene ordinance was enacted and adopted prior to that decision. So could you say, well, we'll do mandates only for everything going forward? Potentially that was where the board was going. I don't know. My thought in response to Mr. Heller's comment about could we take the polystyrene ordinance and just simply leave it in place and post it on the website and there's no enforcement, that sounds a little bit more like what your board considered as doing model ordinances, which I know was rejected at the time you discussed the strategic plan. So not necessarily a legal answer, but I'm not concerned about the legal challenges of this so much as the overall direction as where your board wants to go as a whole.
So could I follow up and ask you then, Jeff? So put this issue aside, if something else came up at the next board meeting that had to do with, Are we going to see things on the agenda that are, or is this just an isolated item? Are we going to see things on the agenda that are asking us to make decisions that are above and beyond state mandates? And we're just going to take individual votes on that every time now into the future, even though we voted as a group not to do that? Or are you saying this is just a one-time issue because it's an anomaly because it happened once before? Or could conceivably every meeting we be taking a decision on an issue like that?
My understanding is that the executive director brought this forward because it had been adopted prior to the mandates only approach, and this was been hanging out there and not addressed. But Brooks, if you have a different take, but from our discussions, that's what I understand.
Yeah, thank you. We're doing our best to make sure that we filter everything through, whether it's mandated or not. So even those smaller expenses that were in the budget, for example, I'm letting you know those are not mandated, but they are related to the programs that we do. And that's why I want your feedback even to that level of detail. So no, I don't anticipate bringing anything to you that is not a mandate.
So, thank you. Other board members? Debbie, let me do Keith first, then I'll come back to you. Keith?
Great. Thank you very much. Just a couple of questions, Brooks. In regards to managing the polystyrene ban, whether this board were to decide to keep it as is or scale it back, really managing it probably doesn't change much because it still needs to be managed. Would that be accurate, or does it change if the wording was changed to scale it back a little bit?
It would be, I would say, about half the effort if it was scaled back, because you would eliminate the churches and the nonprofits and the civic groups. So that would be a significant, reduce the workload extensively.
Okay. And then in regards to people contacting, I know we've got a lot of contact emails. I've had phone calls. The overwhelming amount are in support of keeping the ordinance as it stands. In regards to like the poultry industry, I do remember the letter that was sent to us where they actually said they wanted to delay the ordinance a little bit because they were changing their mechanisms and their processing in order to adapt to the changing environment of packaging needs, which I believe they said it was 12 to 18 months where they could get to that. Have we ever been recontacted by any of these larger poultry companies or the wine industry offering some type of stance on this issue? I've received nothing. And I was just curious from your office, I imagine if you would have passed it on to us.
I'll defer to Patty on that. Patty, have you had any further contact?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, I've had further contact on these industries and we have been working with them. The bottom line is they still will need to food packing in particular will still need to file exemptions. It does take a long time to transfer over. And in some cases, they just can't find a suitable product, as Debbie Arnold mentioned, especially when it comes to chilled wines being sent out of state, just one product in particular. So we are in contact with them. They are anxiously looking at this meeting right now to see where the board's going to stand on this. So they'll need to know, okay, do we need to turn in exemptions or not?
Okay. No, I appreciate that. That's all I have for now.
Thank you, Keith. Scott, I see you have a hand up.
Thank you. A couple of questions. On option number one, we talk about scaling back the education. Am I reading the ordinance right that there's an option there for this to be a criminal offense, which actually could include jail time, and we'd actually consider this as an option?
I'm going to hand that to you, Brooks.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm probably going to ask Mr. Minery to weigh in on that. My basic understanding is that it just follows part of the enforcement code, and that's just the basic function, is that it could include significant penalties. But Mr. Minery, can you weigh in on that?
Thank you. And that was a subject of discussion at the time. We are following code by saying violations of ordinances are misdemeanors We do have a citation process in there as well, which was discussed, if I'm recalling correctly. Of course, as has been pointed out by the executive director, in the entire history of your authority, no criminal penalties or even citations, I believe, have ever been issued. Everything has been handled by outreach and education. I think it was Supervisor Pashong that was very clear on it. Don't focus, might have been Supervisor Gibson, don't focus on the penalties. That's not what this is about. It's about outreach and education.
Okay. Thank you.
So, but if the makeup of the board would change, it could be enforced though, correct?
Well, theoretically, yes, correct. Of course, you have to keep in mind that the IWMA has no enforcement division at all and actually no real ability to enforce that type of penalty. So there is a practical problem with it to start.
Thank you.
Okay, Debbie, I think you were next in line there.
Thank you, Robert. So I just wanted to, especially for the benefit of some of the newer folks that we just discussed, that it was about a year long, there was about a year long discussion on whether or not the JPA would continue on. And I'll admit, I was one of the people really concerned, and I still am. The polystyrene ordinance just, for me, triggered a bigger issue. And that is that originally, as Brooke said, in 1994, that we created a JPA because we saw a lot of regulations pertaining to recycling, pertaining to landfill volume, et cetera, et cetera. And it made sense to for economy of scale and so forth, to for all the cities and the county to come together in special districts. Robert, I won't leave you out of this. And work together on compliance. The fact that we did this once before, and now we're starting to see it come back, that this body is starting to legislate, to me, that's the bigger issue. So what we have is a 13-person organization here, each city's represented, special districts represented in the county. When we're legislating out of this body, there are people that are clearly legislating out of their jurisdiction. And I just think that's wrong. I think that if any of us want to go back to our jurisdiction where we've been elected and ban polystyrene or anything else you want to ban or legislate anything you want to do, do it in the jurisdiction you represent. But what I worry about, and for me today, we talked about this for about a year because I think it's very wrong. If this board is going to go right away back to legislating outside of their jurisdiction with ordinances, Brooks has given us an opportunity to kind of show that we are willing to abide by the agreement that we made, the JPA. This is just we'll work with each other to comply with state mandates, et cetera, but to me, the only option that's going to show that this body's going to move forward in the spirit of our year-long discussion would be rescinding this ordinance and let the local jurisdictions adopt an ordinance if they feel they want to. I'm sure IWMA would even provide them with the ordinance, but to me, the egregious thing that we've tried to stop is just legislating outside of your own jurisdiction. So I'm hoping that our board will remember we've got some new people, but the discussion that we had, and take this ordinance to, like I say, their own jurisdiction and pass it that way. Otherwise, I think we're really not doing the right thing by our own constituency in our own jurisdictions. I just had to get that out.
Thank you, Debbie. Could we go to John Pushon next, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that, you know, we've been having this discussion of enforcement on COVID issues. And as the sheriff and the district attorney have said that they would not be prosecuting any of those, and this would be probably even below those. So I think as we move forward, you have to look at, you know, and by the way, one of the reasons was because of the 20,000 criminals that have been released out of the jails, they're very, very busy doing real police work and real district attorney work. So I was against this because of that, that 6 month jail sentence and that, the $1,000 fine. And I remember speaking to the IWMA over 10 years ago on this issue, when I was just a regular citizen from Templeton. And obviously to me, if we're talking about local control, which I know every single person on here believes that, you know, local control is the key to what makes community government work, I think that we need to look at rescinding the ordinance and allow local jurisdictions to adopt and implement. And that's the staff's recommendation too. Thank you.
Thank you, John. With that, I'll go to John Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd echo definitely John and Debbie that, you know, it should come down to the local jurisdiction to implement legislation upon their constituents. As I recall, five of the cities already had styrofoam ordinances within their jurisdiction. It was more designed, as I recall, to make the North County comply. And that was the rub. Again, I totally agree that if we repeal this and bring it back to amend the ordinance in Jeff's language to either repeal it or amend it, one of the two, is probably where I want to go. But the question to staff is, if we postpone this ordinance, you know, until SB 1383 does happen in 2025, it seems to me from what I am trying to learn that the 1383 would be less restrictive than the ordinance that is currently in the books in San Luis County. Is that correct?
Brooks?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that last statement.
Is our current ordinance that we have more restrictive than what 1383 would have implemented through state mandates in the next 5 years?
Well, 1383 won't directly address polystyrene in this way. It's mainly focused on organics and the food waste component.
Right. Yeah.
But let me clarify the postponement there. I'm saying we need additional funding assistance through 2025. You could postpone for a couple of years and see what happens with the legislation. And if the state is going to ban it or standardize plastics, which will ultimately mean that polystyrene would be one of those phased out ones, you could postpone it in between there and see what happens with the legislation. You don't have to go to 2025.
Got it. Well, again, that's going back to, again, my thought is that we as an agency, IWMA now, is going to implement only state mandated ordinances at that point and no more restrictive than that. So if, again, 1383 will not get to the polystyrene, and then I think it's upon the local agency, local cities, to do their own ordinance at this point and not IWMA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, John. Karen, you had a comment. Karen Bright.
Yes, thank you. Actually, I had a question and then a comment as well. Regarding the wineries, I didn't quite catch what was said regarding the wineries and their exemptions. Can I hear that again, please? Just a brief synopsis of how that was working.
Yeah, I think Patty indicated that she had spoken to them recently and they would not be able to comply within the first year. And so they would have to file exemptions and we would help them with that.
Okay. But, and I see according to the ordinance, their exemptions are available.
Correct.
Thank you. So I don't see where we have received any comment from any businesses. Am I wrong about that? I mean, there have been so many public comment received. I may have overlooked them, but I believe Mr. Hammond asked that question, but I couldn't quite hear what the answer was.
Brooks?
Yeah, I don't really want to comment on the public comment. I don't want to make a determination of who's submitting those.
Okay. Honestly. So I haven't seen any, so I'm just going to say I have not seen any public comment from any local businesses regarding this issue. So I'm just going to go with that. Okay. So then, regarding the all I can say is that I'm just seeing a lot of public comment. Many of them come from constituents from unincorporated parts of the county, Oceano, Los Osos, Avila, and they need someone to represent them. So I guess that's why they're here. So my opinion on that is if the county wasn't going to pull out of IWMA during this period, I think that we would have, as far as I'm concerned, I would have continued on the way that we were going. But because we had that issue, I feel like we had to kind of reassess where we were. So anyway, that's what I have to say at this point in time. So thank you for this time.
Thank you, Karen. And Charles, I believe you were next.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll try to keep it to a question because I think we're probably getting a little bit into comments that can wait until after public input. Regarding what Supervisor Compton first brought up, which I think is really the critical issue here today, is keeping the ordinance in place in keeping with the strategic direction we decided on in November. But to be clear, I mean, it's very important and necessary for us to be here today discussing this because if I understand it correctly, and this would be a question for Jeff, if we did absolutely nothing, if we didn't have this on the agenda today, if we didn't have this discussion this month or next month, based on our last action a year ago, the ordinance would go into effect in April of 2021, correct?
Well, you would have, I think it would have probably been more of a focal point at the time you had your discussion on this strategic plan. In that, right, yes, this is, as far as I'm concerned, Brooks will correct me, this is the only ordinance on the books with IWMA right now that is beyond what is mandated by the state. And so right, that, I would imagine that would have been addressed at some point.
Right, but I mean, procedurally wise, if we don't have this discussion today and provide direction, it would automatically go into effect because our last action was to suspend its effective date until April of 2021.
I believe that is correct. Yes.
Right. So we, you know, this is a very important and necessary discussion for us to have. And I think I did have another question, but I think it'll wait until after we hear a public comment. I think it's important for us to get along with that.
Okay. Bruce Gibson, you had your hand up earlier.
I did, Mr. Chairman, but mine are really comments and correct some of the misrepresentations that have been offered so far. So I'll save that until after public comment.
All right, thank you very much. And seeing no other hands up, any other board members wishing to comment?
I do, please, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for the time. I'm glad everybody's given feedback and certainly I think that the ordinance as it's written is too far at this point. I think that is a state mandated item. There's no doubt that the expansiveness of it, as well as the craziness of people in jail kind of stuff. I guess that the point is that, you know, was hoping to find some kind of common ground as far as just the clams and the cups and have it, let it go with that for now. A lot of people are doing it. I think it's important for the citizens to understand that, you know, San Diego tried to do all number six and do this expansive stuff, and everything's on hold because of legal issues. Basically, that's a big market. That's a legal issues. People are going to come down, and it'd probably be so here if we went that far. I can't say for sure. So I think that there is an important education piece to this of what it means that we do need the state to lead on big stuff like that. However, I'll go to the public comment, but I just wanted to add those pieces to the conversation, if you will, the focus of where we are right now.
Thank you, Don. Okay, seeing no other board member comments, I will open this to public comment. And keep in mind that we have read the comments that were submitted in writing. And if there are additional comments or ideas, we'd like to hear about that at this time. So Barbara, I'll go to you for people wishing to speak.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may select the raise hand button on the bottom of your screen. Or if you are on the phone, you may select star 9. And I do have quite a few coming up. And I am, let's go ahead. Aaron, you're going to be first up.
Thank you.
Wait, where's Aaron?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Erin Foote, and I'm from San Luis Obispo. This is not a repeat of a written comment because I, like many people, found out about this at 9:07 this morning. This ban took a lot of work to get enacted, and it was very public and very protracted and involved many stakeholders. So the lack of transparency at this point is really baffling and not a little bit insulting. Second, I do not understand why this board is unwilling to spend $100,000 to educate businesses and consumers, but today is also considering a $300,000 expenditure on a Walnut Creek consulting firm that the president himself told that he was going to charge citizens for. So if staff is simply too busy to educate folks, how will they have time to write a new ordinance and hold a hearing? The statement of fiscal impact seems pretty misleading. And why are we paying these consultants so much money if it's still only going to be something that staff has time to do from now until 2025? And to address Ms. Arnold's concern regarding legislating, how does raising a tax to pay a consultant not amount to such? This circular logic would be fascinating if it wasn't so infuriating. Third, it was just 2 months ago that individuals who sit on this board decided to create the county's own per-person campaign contribution ordinance because they didn't want to be dictated to by the state. But in this case, it's fine to defer to them for a ruling that doesn't take effect for another 4 years or because we might think that the state might do something in the future. So what is it? Who makes decisions for Slo County? I am sick and tired of the lack of accountability and leadership from the county. Some of you have demonstrated over and over again that you believe yourself above the will of the people, that you somehow know better than your constituents. So this will come to surprise no one if you ignore us again. But this is some real bare minimum, low-hanging fruit as far as environmental considerations go, and I ask that the board stick to its original decision and plan to keep and implement the polystyrene ban. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Erin. Barbara, next person.
Let's see, Eric, you are going to be next. Okay, Eric, it looks like you are on a lower version of Zoom, so I'm going to have to promote you to panelists in order for you to make your comment. And are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I am Eric Greening, and the first thing I will say is that when you go to the website of the IWMA, you can click a button at the top left and get to this meeting and so on. If you click a button at the top right, it goes to polystyrene ordinance that is presented as an adopted ordinance that will take effect on April 9th. And so that part of the outreach is already being done. What you do not have in front of you anywhere is a basis of findings for either option 2 or option 3. There is no staff analysis for anything that changes the direction that is already being taken, has been taken, and is being taken based on the action of your board last year. And so to move in any other direction than option 1 taking effect April 9th is to require probably a greater expenditure and a greater effort than simply moving forward with what already has a firm basis of findings. Polystyrene, the fact that it is not already being taken care of in state legislation, and we don't even know whether it will be taken care of in state legislation. As pollutants go, it is particularly pernicious. Most pollutants are either stable and very long-lasting, or they are volatile and immediately polluting. Polystyrene is the worst of both worlds. It can stabilize in the environment for as long as we can't even know how long, because it hasn't been around that long. We know it's at least decades, possibly centuries. Once exposed to the sunlight, it photodegrades and releases the styrenes. The health costs of the exposure to the styrenes completely outweigh any costs that might be made in an outreach effort. So I would encourage you to continue with exactly what your website already says you are doing, which is preparing the public and businesses and the entire community for the enactment, the implementation of this ordinance to take place on April 9th. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Barbara?
Jim Daytona, you will be on next. Okay, Jim, you should be able to unmute yourself.
All good. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, President Enns and directors. My name is Jim D'Antona. I'm president and CEO for the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce and here representing our 1,300 member businesses located throughout the county. When we spoke on this item back in September of 2019, we had four guiding principles that our chamber board wanted to convey. That an ordinance not unintentionally incentivize retailers to carry out-of-area products over something that is locally packaged, that any program or ordinance includes supportive on-ramps, education, and resources to ensure a smooth transition, that the rules be equally enforced across all jurisdictions, ensuring that there is an even playing field, and that it include a formal, easy-to-utilize process for legitimate hardship exemptions. One of the key principles of our economic vision that some of you at the county meeting got to hear me say yesterday is that we want to bring a consistent and equally applied rules for our business community and region to follow across all levels of government. So we would ask that this agency and the board utilize its expertise in this sector to look to standardize all of these waste and recycling issues across our region. As a chamber, we value environmentally sustainable business practices. And back in September, we advocated that you adopt a ban on only expanded polystyrene and develop a plan that enables businesses to know what is coming and to plan for the change through their yearly budgeting process. A clear multi-year runway would enable the smoothest transition toward that important goal. This program must also include proactive education and assistance to support the success of this endeavor. While marketing and awareness campaigns can come in many shapes and sizes, we believe that it's essential to include metrics for success in educating businesses, residents, and visitors regarding recycling and disposal of polystyrene and other single-use plastics. Finally, we encourage the IWMA to explore technology that will enable SLO County to recycle more materials than our facility currently allows. Thank you for considering input from the local business community and for carefully considering the details or amendments to the ordinance in front of you this afternoon. We certainly value our working relationship with the IWMA and look forward to continue working on all these issues that affect our business community. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Barbara, next speaker.
Okay. So Alex Mintzer is up next. Alex, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Yes, you should be able to hear me now.
Yes, we can.
Okay. This is Alex Mintzer from Los Osos, and I appreciate the wish of...
Uh-oh.
I think we just lost him, Barbara.
Yeah, it looks like it. All right, well, if he pops back on, Oh, there he is. Alex, are you still there?
Still here.
Okay. Here we go. Let's start that again.
Okay. This is Alex Mintzer from Los Osos, and I appreciate the sentiment of Board Member Arnold on not wishing to legislate outside of her jurisdiction, outside of her district area, since Los Osos is one of the places that's going to be affected by what IWMA does. I am concerned that... this ordinance that's in place should be kept. It went through quite a public process. It was a good ordinance. This is option one, which is what I favor. In terms of leading a direction towards phasing out these plastic polystyrene, expanded polystyrene plastics, because that's the direction the state is ultimately going. I note that the ordinance allows for exemptions, which is good because there are going to be some business hardship cases. And I think exemptions but because there are exemptions, there should be no reason to withdraw the ordinance at this point. The education, I would say, $105,000 at a county level expenditure is, to be honest, fairly small potatoes. Especially when you're talking about spending $30,000 on a structural engineering survey of the building, which probably will come in for a third of that when you actually consult with structural engineers. So I want to express strongly a feeling that we should not be backsliding, and voting for option three would definitely be backsliding. I support option one of your choice. Stay the course in this case. The state is going to get there. And as I said, exemptions will allow for any business hardships in place. So again, thank you very much. Option one is the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Barbara?
Next up is Janine Rands. Okay, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, good. I'm Janine Rands from San Luis Obispo, and we're here because of polystyrene. So I just want to start off with, I don't know a single person from San Simeon to Oceana who wants to eat out of polystyrene or visit parks or the beach littered with polystyrene. I've been quite impressed with the public outpouring of support, and Mr. M, you said about 100 letters. I had started calculating, there's 67 pages of letters. I started writing down names, and I got to page 15 and ran out of time. There, I had already 40 names from the first 15 pages. So I figured there's about 200 letters. So does this mean, and I didn't see a single letter of protest, does this mean that the public isn't all aware if there is any people that want to protest this ordinance? Or does it mean that everybody does really want a clean, litter-free environment? Five cities with polystyrene ordinances are very proud of our polystyrene-free cities. So my option is, of course, to promote ordinance option one. The ordinance took years in the making, and your recommendation today to dismantle or rescind it in one meeting should not be allowed without more public consideration. You voted to pass the ordinance and products on October 9, 2019. And in that, you started you started education. The county published this. Your website promotes all the outreach that was already done. It tells who it applies to, the prohibited materials, acceptable materials, or exemptions. Your website and brochure, rather, are rather exceptional. I did a call last week and pulled six out of nine store grocery outlet and retail stores in Paso Robles and Tascadero. And already six of those major stores have stopped selling polystyrene foodware when the ordinance took place. That's the big ones like Target, Walmart, Albertsons, Vons, and the small one, the 99 cent store. So people are already applying the ordinance. 4 years ago, responding to Ms. Arnold's statement about wineries, about 4 years ago, I polled big wineries up in Paso Robles area. I called about 12 of them, and all 12 had people that came on the line and they said, out of principle, we do not use polystyrene foam to ship. It's against our principles. We are being a winery. They're producing a product that is typically considered chemical free. I wanted to make a reference to the term styrofoam has been used more than once today by a number of you. I want to refresh everybody that the term styrofoam should not be used by this professional office. Styrofoam is a trademark name made for thermal insulation and craft application. It is owned and manufactured by the Dow Chemical Company, and the industry begs the public to stop using this term referring to foam foodware.
Janine, may I interrupt you, please?
Yeah.
You're well past your 3 minutes.
Oh, crud. Well, I wanted to add, there is no pending legislation with any details, definition, or implementation. If they were last year, there was 2030 that there was going to be any implementation. There is nothing on the books right now. So I urge you to go for option number one. Okay. There is a public outcry for that.
Thank you, Janine.
You're welcome.
Marvin, next speaker, please.
The next up is Michael Friend. And I just lost him, sorry. Hold on 1 second. There he is. Okay, Michael, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you for your time. And my name is Michael Friend. And I am a materials engineer at Cal Poly SLO. And I'm just simply here to explain why I feel this ordinance is very important and why I'm removing the already existing ordinance and leaving it up to a possibility that localities would create a new ordinance is quite short-sighted. So as has already been mentioned, just the environmental impact of polystyrene. So it's a very hard It's a very hard plastic to recycle. And if you look at the IWMA website itself, in SLO, it is not recycled, both foam and polystyrene. And from just educating my peers here in college and back in my hometown, they don't understand that it's not recyclable. So this ends up to a lot of wish cycling, people not understanding what goes where in trash and waste recycling bins. So it just leads to a burden on trying to properly sort this in waste centers. And recycling is already a hot mess. And it's already hot enough of a mess. So that's one issue. And then on top of this, there's a health issue. So as mentioned, polystyrene is not a particularly friendly chemical on the body. It's known to leach a lot of carcinogens into people. And on top of this, in plastic pollution, there's an issue with it over time, once it's in the ocean, getting into the food supply for various fish and whatnot. And over generations, this leads to messing with the body's hormones and leads to infertility as well as nervous system problems. So when I say it's short-sighted, we're in a pandemic because we didn't want to invest in the proper facilities and capacities to deal with very infectious diseases, as Bill Gates pointed out years ago. And we should not make the same mistake with plastics that we made with the virus. We don't want to have issues down the line where people can't properly have children. We don't want to have issues where people are having nervous system problems. So investing now in this ordinance and being smart about it is really quintessential to our health. So thank you guys so much for your time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Michael. Barbara, next speaker, please.
Next up is Dylan Stevens. Dylan, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Greetings to the board. My name is Dylan Stevens. I'm the president of the Zero Waste Club at Cal Poly, and I came in support of option one, or continuance, because of the lack of information that has been disseminated about this choice and the decision that will be made here today. So I'd like to come from the environmental standpoint. It's about 30 million pounds of styrene that ends up in our environment each year. So from a coastal community, we have to consider the fact, as Michael was pointing out, that styrene will end up in fish that we will inevitably eat, as well as in our streams and all around our community. And this will impact our health, and we've known this for a while. As early as the 80s, the EPA showed that styrene was present in 100% of the humans' fat samples that they tested. It's within us now, and we have to consider how we can evade that in the future. So yes, it has effects also on the central nervous system, hormones, and potentially cancer. So I know many of the board members have brought up the financial standpoint, and I have experience in this, and have worked for a business to sell biodegradables and distribute them. So I would like to say that the cost that is inflicted to the actual businesses is quite marginal. We're talking about 1 or 2 cents per unit to change from polystyrene to a paper or plastic product, and within a margin of 5 to 15 cents to change to a biodegradable. If we're talking about a normal business that might sell 100, let's say, units in a day, we're talking about just $14 or $15 per day that the business is having to pay extra. And if you think about in the actual food that they're going to sell, what business can't afford to add 15 cents to one of their meals? If a burrito costs 15 more cents, that doesn't mean you're not going to buy it the next time you go into a restaurant. So I'd please like you to consider all three of those standpoints when you make your decisions, and other places around the country and the world that have done this. I mean, Berkeley did this ban starting in the 80s. We're way behind the times. And I think that if SLO wants to represent itself as a county that is standing up for environmental reasons and trying to make improvements on the environment, then I think we need to make sure this ban goes in action.
Thank you, Dylan. Barbara, next speaker, please.
Next up is Allison. Allison, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi. I'm deeply concerned that the IWMA is even considering stalling the ban on polystyrene again. Less than half of the 280 million metric tons of plastic produced each year ends up in the landfill. Much of the rest litters our landscape and is blown by the wind and washed downstream rivers and into our sea. So far, Americans spend $520 million a year to clean up plastic litter washing up on our West Coast beaches and shorelines. Efforts to clean up the ocean's enormous swirling gyres of garbage has an incalculable cost. It would be wiser and more fiscally responsible to stop the river of trash from entering the ocean in the first place. As plastics break down into microscopic fibers and specks, it can be inhaled and ingested by humans and wildlife. One study found that such microfibers were present in human lung cancers. Seabirds that have consumed plastic waste have 300% greater concentrations of PCBs in their tissues than other birds. The IWMA does have a mandate to follow the act in 1989, as cited in the 2012 ordinance prohibiting single-use plastics in SLO County stores. That ordinance is empowering you to achieve the mandates imposed by this commission. We're in a pandemic and many people have increased their takeout consumption. We're already killing ourselves, children, and the planet with hazardous chemicals, including plastic, and need to accept responsibility for our actions. The people have spoken. We're paying attention, and we demand that you keep your word to protect us and our environment from this toxic waste. There is no similar legislation, and why wouldn't you want to take the lead in cleaning our air, water, and land? 2 years ago, you decided takeout food and beverage, and this is a quote, that is reusable, biodegradable, and recyclable is the most responsible and sustainable choice for SLO County's tourism economy, its citizenry, and environment. When products are reusable or recyclable, natural resources are spared and less energy and resources are used to produce new products. Now we need you to keep your word. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. Barbara, next speaker, please.
And the last one I have with their hand raised is Barry Rands. Okay, Barry, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to point out there were a couple of the board members concerned about jail time written into this ordinance. But I really feel that this argument is disingenuous because every one of the ordinances that I saw that on your website, you've already got about a dozen different ordinances, and that language is in every one of those ordinances. So this is standard boilerplate language, and it's part of every other ordinance that you guys are implementing. So to argue that this is something out of the ordinary is, I feel, very disingenuous. Thank you.
And I'm sorry, President Enns. One more person put up their hand.
Thank you, Barry. Go ahead, Barbara.
Luke Dunn is our last speaker, it looks like, unless there's anybody else in the audience. Okay, Luke, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hey, is this working?
Yes, it is.
Hello? Oh, thank you. Luke Dunn here. I'm still seeking some clarification behind the intention behind item 10, even after all this. I will say that I feel the price cost for item 1 is inaccurate, and perhaps you underestimate the public's ability to enforce these ordinances. As Jeff said, the true enforcement is not in the IWMA scope. It appears that item 2 is not valid because polystyrene is not in SB 1383, if that was stated correctly. And someone mentioned following state mandates. What about the source reduction mandate of solid, the source reduction of solid waste mandate? Polystyrene is solid waste. Rob Hilton from HF&H referenced an option during his last strategic planning presentation for cities removing themselves from IWMA and becoming independently responsible for their implementation of waste practices. I would hope that if a city actually has such a large amount of supporters or constituents for reintroducing polystyrene, that they would remove themselves from this issue and potentially the IWMA as to not constrict progress for the other cities. Is this rescindence related to COVID-19? If so, how? Is it a financial issue? Will allowing businesses to use polystyrene save them from going under? If this doesn't appear to be the case in San Luis Obispo, what are the businesses that are in support of this rescindence? I'd like to point out that businesses could potentially lose customer support from using such a widely shamed and unsupported material such as polystyrene. And I'd like to also ask if all the board members have consulted with their city's utilities departments on this item. Where are the environmental impact reports? Derek Lamb, he's a recycling specialist for San Diego. He had mentioned that their city is waiting for an EIR before going forward with their polystyrene ordinance. If your mind has already been made up, the uninformed public is left to assume the worst. Are the large corporate plastic businesses your priority? Is there a conflict of interest? I will leave you with one final question. What would Aaron Gomez say?
All right. Thank you, Luke. Barbara, is there anyone else?
That is everybody for public comment.
Okay. Thank you. And I just wanted to clarify, I'll close public comment then. I just wanted to clarify in the letters that came in today, there were actually exactly 100 names. Not quite that many letters because some were signed by a husband and a wife, but there were exactly 100 names that were submitted comments. So with that, I'll bring it back to the board for additional comments.
Mr. Chairman, are you going to go by the hand raise or?
Yeah, I can do that, but I'd like to hear from you, sir. Yeah, Bruce.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's going to be interesting to see where the votes are today. You know, if we were true to our mission, if we are to be true to our mission, we'd go ahead and activate this ordinance in April as we agreed previously to do, because we're set up to do exactly what Mr. D'Antona of the Slow Chamber advocated that we do. That is to move forward with countywide consistency, to educate and to enable compliance. And this has long been the tradition of the IWMA, and it's resulted in great success. You know, the idea of we only being in the business of doing mandates is actually being willfully misrepresented here, I think. The strategic plan that we considered was a forward-looking document. What's going to be the future of this organization? There was never any discussion of going back and rescinding actions that we have taken for good reason and on the basis of good findings. And, you know, frankly, to me, the retreat to mandates only is a very weak response. You know, San Luis Obispo County could be a leader and has been in the past a leader, but in the future, we could be a leader on this in this arena, and we're choosing not to be. And instead, we're hung up on ideology. We've been held hostage to those who would blow up this joint powers authority because they ended up on the short end of a vote. And that's really a very sad situation to be in. And the excuses, which I'm sure you're going to hear in the deliberations going forward, are many. That there are onerous penalties, of course, that will not be applied and never have been. That we need to preserve local control, which is selectively invoked and frankly ignores the efficiency of us acting as a county as a whole. That there's going to be an impact to our local economy, which frankly blatantly ignores the impact to the environment that is supporting those very businesses in our communities. And so I would have to say that to rescind this ordinance would be a sad abrogation of our responsibility to mission. And I hope that we have enough votes here today to avoid that ignoble fate. It's been put forward that a compromise of modifying the ordinance to address expanded polystyrene, which is obviously the worst actor here, obviously the thing that would most concern certainly of those of us that live on the coast. If we can't even get there, I think we've fallen far short. So I look forward to hearing what the majority of this body wants to do. And appreciate your time granted me, Mr. Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Jeff Heller, I see your hand up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on the board a little more than 2 years. I was thrilled when I was appointed to it because I do feel like this county is forward-thinking in terms of protecting our environment Most residents in the county, I believe, are appreciative of the open space we have and the beautiful place that we live. I was surprised when this issue first came up in that it was so contentious, considering the fact that cities and counties and states have been adopting resolutions stricter than this for over 30 years. And here is San Luis Obispo County still debating the validity of its importance. I was relieved when the ordinance was formally approved by this body. Approved, as many of the public comments have attested to. And the implementation of it was postponed only due to the pandemic and our attempt to relieve hardships that might have come to businesses as a result of its implementation. As one of the public commenters said, the difference between a polystyrene to-go container and a compostable one is 15 cents. I find it hard to believe that that puts a hardship on any of the restaurants or local businesses that use these kinds of products. Many of these businesses have taken it upon themselves to do it because they know it's the right thing to do. We are not the innovators in this issue. We are not early adopters. We are not the early majority nor the late majority. If we fail to pass this ordinance today, which on our website has been doing the outreach, it's happening April 9th. This is what's happening. The outreach has begun today on our website. If we fail to adopt this ordinance, we are the laggards. The people are leading. We are bringing up the tail end. This is unfinished business prior to our strategic plan, which talks about dealing with mandates only. This is prior business. This is the only piece of prior business that I know of that we need to tie up. Let's do the right thing, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other comments? Keith, I see you.
Great. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it. I appreciate the comments provided by the two speakers before me. As I look at this issue, back in September and October of 2019, we discussed the polystyrene ordinance, and it really resulted in a contingent of strong public support for its passage. Even in the last week thus far, I've received, and Robert, we might have to compare notes, but I have 209 written public comments in support of the ordinance. I've had three very long phone calls. We've had letters from the Sierra Club, the Surfrider Foundation, Oceano CSD, North County Watch, EcoSlow, all of which represent thousands of members of our community within the county. All were supportive of the ordinance. Conversely, if there are those in the public that were not interested in this ordinance, they certainly didn't appear on any level to write or share their concerns in any overwhelming fashion. I would expect that industries like the beef, wine, and poultry industry would step forward to protect whatever issues they needed to support a delay or difference ordinance of some support, but that did not happen. In 2019, our board engaged in a great deal of discussion about the merits of the ordinance, but I think most revealing at that time was that some members felt that new mandates were above and beyond what we already were going to be asked of by the state. But in the end, we passed the polystyrene ordinance. Even in my own community of Arroyo Grande, we had a polystyrene ordinance on our books, but because of the new IWMA ordinance, we rescinded our old one and put forth the IWMA, because through public comment and our own meeting, our community desired a more aggressive approach to polystyrene and those issues. But as we fast forward today, I think it was this ordinance that triggered the problem. It caused us to venture into some political disruption about the individual or combined purpose of the IWMA. And through this disruption, we have come to a place where we have decided to stand together, concentrating on mandates only. And due to the process of COVID, we've decided to extend the ordinance and not have it in place for an entire year. But it's kind of left us in this gray or limbo area as to what our newfound purpose and intent is. I know when I voted for mandates only, it was to move forward, knowing that the polystyrene ordinance was approved and in place. And to me, rescinding something that was already approved seems disingenuous to me. But I can't overstate the overwhelming obvious part of this to me, and I think we would all agree that the plastics industry is a very noticeable market when we look at convenience and cost. The immediate value to the manufacturer, distributor, and the consumer is quick, it's easy, and in many ways it's profitable on the front end. I would guess there's a limited shelf life, maybe 1 to 2 years on these products as they move through creation to disposal. But yet on the back end, once this container hits the trash, it no longer has a purpose or value. Many of these items are made with toxic materials and they're not recyclable and they take up decades to decay. And that's if it's lucky enough to hit a landfill. Even then, we have to control those toxins and contain them at our own collective expense. Otherwise, these products end up in some unregulated trash pile. They get tossed on the roadside. They make the way into our waterways and eventually accumulate and pollutes our oceans, contaminates our own food chain, and creates illness and death in animals and humans. Aside from all of this, there's the monumental task and the amounts of money, equipment, time, and the people power to clean it up. And we're in a situation where the cleanup demand can't keep up with the dumped supply. Again, on the front end, the manufacturer, distributor, and consumer have scored with a 1 to 2 year shelf life of a product. But on the back end, our society suffers for decades beyond our lifetimes and impacts the future generations of others. I do have to take a moment to say happy birthday to my youngest son who turned 23 today, but it reminds me as a dad that I have to balance the importance of my own choices and my own influence to make a better life for him and our shared future generations. So I do take this issue very seriously. And I recognize today and I appreciate that we are a stronger IWMA than we were 6 months ago. I appreciate the efforts of us trying to come to this point. And we've decided to move forward with a philosophy of mandates only. I personally came to this decision because I felt our purpose could be greater together than individually. But I told myself I needed to throttle back a little bit my own concerns, because I do think in some areas I could be a little more aggressive with what we do. But I wanted to throttle back and come to a place of consensus and mutual benefit for us all. With that said, I'm asking those that may not support the ordinance to throttle up a little bit, to come to a similar place of consensus and understanding. This decision was already debated, it was approved, and an overwhelming number of our constituents have spoke and written on the issue. And to me, it's obvious what they want. Our attempts to control this toxic and pollutant item like polystyrene is just a small step in the world of mass-produced plastics. It's literally overwhelming on a world scale. But this global problem creates negative impacts to our county and in turn trickles down to our state and ultimately our county. I think the only way change can occur on the back end of this disposal problem is by creating change on the front end of the creation. And this is our opportunity to take responsibility for our share of the problem. We may be but a small sliver in the process, but our willingness to create positive and meaningful change can start with us and it can be pushed up to the state and to our country and to the world. I know it's lofty, but sometimes it's the tiny results in small places that can grow to become a bigger impact on larger spaces. I suspect in time, the state will probably pass down some rules and ordinances, regulations in regard to this matter. But I think it's a benefit to us to prepare our citizens and businesses. And I do feel like many of them have already been complying already and they're happy to do so because it's the right thing to do. So I'm asking my colleagues to consider a consensus in saving this one ordinance as designed and already approved. And I intend to vote in one of two ways. One, I will vote to either approve the ordinance as is and begin in April, or have some consideration to what's going on in our world at this point in time. We are still in COVID. This is the reason why we're here having this discussion, because we delayed this due to COVID, no other reason. But if COVID is still an issue and we're still having businesses suffer, I would even consider postponing the ordinance until January of 2022, giving our businesses a little more time, a little more grace as they look to recover. And also this gives Brooks 10 months and his staff time to hire the new SB 1383 program manager and define those tasks needed for our organic waste program. And during this time, we continue to do outreach and education that can assist our citizens and businesses to be successful in understanding the importance of the polystyrene ban. And Brooks also has the flexibility to provide exemptions where needed. So I hope my approach is thoughtful based on the consensus and understanding we've built to this point. The approach recognizes the constraints facing our IWMA staff, as they are committed to meeting many of our recycling and trash stream needs and mandates, yet provides ample time to prepare the rollout and education of this ordinance. It acknowledges the difficult conditions facing our citizens and businesses during this major and disruptive pandemic, and ultimately in 10 short months, we'll have a mechanism to rid our shared county of polystyrene and EPS products and their detrimental effect. So that's where I'm standing at this point, and I'm looking forward to hearing other thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. And I'll go to John Hammonds next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you can hear me, I just, walked in the house here. So again, my position basically is that the agreement we had with regard to the JPA was that we were not going to move forward on any ordinances that were not state mandated. Testimony shows that even 1383 will not have any component, it sounds like, of the polystyrene, which is, I think, is a problem. But on the other hand, again, right now, each member city has their own power to legislate their constituents. They already had, as I said, I think there was five cities that had already done this once before, but it was more the fact that other member agencies had not done it, that they used the JPA to make them comply. That was the rub. And again, I don't like that. I don't understand it. I don't feel like that is what the JPA is supposed to be doing. So again, I'm not going to vote for anything other than three at this point to bring back and amend or repeal. I think we should amend it. I think what we should do here is option three, to have staff come back with an amendment that we extend the ordinance to a further date. COVID is definitely the reason we pushed it on a little bit further. It's not over yet. So at this point in time, I think three would be my point to push with regard to having a further point of amendment or discussion or repeal at that point. Again, right now, I don't think we should be moving forward. Staff already had testimony showing on item one that they don't have the staff to do it. They would have to outsource it. We're already seeing compliance happening, which is, again, my opinion, what should be done, that everyone understands where we need to go. They're going to do it on their own without being legislated to do it. I've always thought that, again, education is the best component of anything in a society, and people will do the right thing once they know that they can do it economically correct and also keeping their business going at the same time. So in my opinion, again, three would be where I'd like to make a motion whenever chair is ready. Thank you, Mr. Hans.
Thank you. I'd like to hear from Karen Bright next.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank the previous speakers for their eloquent and thoughtful comments. I voted to postpone this ordinance, not to rescind it. And I must say that unless you cleaned up the beach, I have to say that not everyone does act responsibly just because they don't. There's so much, I take my grandchildren to the beach all the time, and we always take a bag with us, and we pick up more polystyrene and plastics and so on than you can imagine. So, and even still cigarette butts. So it is amazing what is still out there. So I have to say that I am very much in agreement with my colleague, Mr. Stewart, and I really do appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Karen. Other board member comments, please. Debbie?
I'm unmuted. Thank you, Robert. So I just want to say, for me, this is not necessarily about the polystyrene. For me, this is really a government process issue. Some on this board have promoted the ability to legislate countywide using this JPA, and I'm going to say again, I think that that's just wrong. A few of you mentioned that the comments were very one-sided and we didn't hear from a lot of the business people and so forth. But I think we must all know to some extent that the IWMA meetings go largely unnoticed by the general public. I really think that laws like this should be discussed by the local councils and the boards. And when I say laws like this, I mean laws that actually affect businesses, affect our citizens, and actually have the authority to penalize. And I heard we mentioned that, oh, we don't use those penalties. Well, if the penalties don't apply, then I don't know why they're written into the ordinance at all. So again, I think ordinances like this should be enacted in their own jurisdictions for a couple of reasons. These are pretty big deals, and their regulations and legislation. I think all council members on the city council should be part of the discussion when these important decisions, laws, carrying penalties are enacted. And I strongly feel that people elected to a particular council should not be able to legislate outside their jurisdiction. Again, take it to your city councils. Pass it there. Engage the public. It acts as educating the public as well as, you know, legislating for the right social reasons. But I think it should be done in your own jurisdictions. And we've talked about this. I feel like that's what the last year we spent the last year. And eventually I thought we'd agreed on this. So anyway, I'll be opting for option 3 when we get ready to vote.
All right. Thank you, Debbie. Charles, you wanted to make a comment earlier?
Yes. Thank you, Robert. First, a little bit of a question. I mean, I think it's important to compliment all of the activists who took the time to write emails, and I give them a lot of credit for doing that. And I know they do stay on top of the IWMA agenda, and I'm glad that Mr. D'Antona weighed in. But I would ask staff, because I think we talked about this before, do we do any outreach to the business community who typically doesn't watch these agendas to say, hey, we're going to be discussing something of interest to you, to try to encourage some feedback from, you know, either the same businesses that we're sending our, new ordinance notifications out to, or at least to chambers of commerce, et cetera. Do we do any outreach to try to induce some comments from that community? So that's a question for Brooks.
We do some outreach. Is it comprehensive enough? I doubt that. We just try to hit some of the major industries and find out what some of the unintended consequences are or might be, but we could certainly do better at that.
But we didn't advise any particular groups or anything that, hey, this item is on the
I did speak to the Chamber of Commerce, and Patty did reach out to the poultry people and the wine people, but it wasn't, you know, it could have certainly been better.
Okay. All right.
We did not reach out to them regarding today's item.
Okay. Thank you. Good to know. I am kind of torn on this because some of you might recall that I did vote for the ordinance. I had some reluctance certainly about some of the issues. And I think over time I have more reluctance, especially about the provisions that pertain to the wine industry. But for me, this is a little less about the specifics of the ordinance. If I had my king for a day, I would redo some things in it. I'm more focused on the issue of what we said we would do. In November, I had this in mind that this ordinance would come up, this issue would come up. I was a little surprised that we so readily voted 11-1 to make it for us to be a mandates only. I thought we would go through a lot more kind of angst to get to that point. But us having got to that point, I think here we are today with this running, a previously approved ordinance running smack dab into what we said our strategic direction was. So I appreciate that. And I think it's probably difficult for others. And I certainly appreciate Mr. Storton and others kind of maybe searching for a little room for compromise. I also expressed concern, I think, at a meeting or two ago about how enforcement occurs and my concern about our, individual city not necessarily wanting to be in the enforcement business. But everybody said, no, the IWMA doesn't have a practical means of enforcing its own ordinances, and therefore enforcement should fall to the cities. And for me, if the cities and the jurisdictions are going to have to do enforcement, then I'd rather that be an enforcement of our own ordinances. And I am prepared to go back to my city council and say, hey, I think we should discuss, since we're one of two cities that doesn't have any form of polystyrene ordinance, that we should consider having a polystyrene ordinance of some sort. But that being said, I am most comfortable with that we, the IWMA, stay focused on state mandated things. Five of the seven cities already have a polystyrene ordinance. They're certainly free to enhance that, as Aurora Grande apparently did by adopting the IWMA version. And then they're certainly free to enforce that. And I, have to go with the idea that each of our jurisdictions needs to do that and not involve the IWMA any further, especially given that in the last, we kind of lost a year here, and we need our staff focused on implementation of 1383, which, as we're going to discuss next, is going to be a grand undertaking that will still require outside help. And so my inclination here right now is that I would go with option three, but I do appreciate everybody else struggling with the decision and those who are suggesting alternatives.
All right. Thank you, Charles. Andy, I see your hand is up. Andy Pease.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate this discussion. I appreciate the additional reasoning between that we're hearing from Supervisor Arnold and Pashong and Compton in terms of legislating out of your jurisdiction and local control. I hear that. I really do appreciate it. That, and it helps give me some insight into why that state mandate decision in the first place. I think that the ordinance that was developed is a really good one. I think it would save the organization, the county, money and health impacts. And so if it doesn't go forward today, I do plan to consider it to see if there is support to adopt it locally at the city. So I think that's a perspective that has some merit. At the same time, I think that the honoring of what has already taken place needs to be carefully considered in this setting. And so, if I were ranking my options, it would be keep it as it is, implement in April. Perhaps the delay one more notch to January of 2022 as Member Storton suggested. So not the 3 years, but something just, that little bit to get us through this last bit of education and consideration. And then if not that, I feel that even those who are kind of wanting the state mandate only piece of it, that there must be some recognition of at least getting the alignment on the expanded polystyrene, as Supervisor Ortiz-Legge said, the clamshells, the cups, nobody wants those, right? We all know to move beyond that. And frankly, as a jurisdiction that has adopted that piece of it, I think it's going to be very confusing for the IWMA then to say, oh, that part's actually okay in these jurisdictions, et cetera. I think that there is a genuine consensus amongst businesses that is no longer allowed here. So I would hope that at least if we can come to a compromise position of either keeping it as is, but maybe just a little bit later, or at least directing staff to come back with the expanded polystyrene clamshell cups kind of ordinance that aligns with the city, so we can have that consistency that Supervisor Gibson talked about in terms of that it is using our collective experience and knowledge to have just the kind of baseline of improvements. That would be my hope. Thanks.
Hey, Andy, thank you. At this time, I'd like to ask Jeff Minery if you would like to comment on this issue of legislating outside the jurisdiction.
I would not.
I thought maybe you'd say that.
If forced to do so, I would. I think that there is a, that from my perspective, from what I'm hearing, there is a split in the way of looking at this issue and the procedures and how this is where we were a year ago. So it's a different way of looking at the issue. So I'm going to leave it at that, and I have no comment otherwise.
Let me ask a question then. Could this ordinance be an issue or be on the agenda of the Board of Supervisors?
I would assume it could be.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other board comments?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that, Mr.
Let me take Bruce first, and then I see Dawn, your hand was up, and Jeff Heller, so we'll take Bruce.
Oh, thank you, sir. Mr. Minery, it's been well established that this JPA has the authority to pass ordinance. We've done half a dozen before this one. They are applicable. They are applicable countywide. I don't believe that the Board of Supervisors has the authority to go into the cities and regulate those things inside the cities. That's been established. Whether we are legislating outside our jurisdiction, as Supervisor Arnold wants to complain about or not, we have the authority to pass this ordinance. It is legally permissible in pursuit of a policy goal. Is that
absolutely correct? That was a very direct question at the time this ordinance was passed. You do have the authority.
Thank you for that clarification.
Jeff, Chair, a question for Jeff Hammond. Jeff, then if what Bruce said is correct, does each member agency have the ability to reject the ordinance on their own and not enforce it?
No, they do not. The way your JPA is written is that rules by the cities or local jurisdictions that are in conflict with the IWMA ordinance would be subordinate.
Correct. That's the way I remember it too. And that's why we objected about that and having the JPA revise its agreement that we would only enforce state mandated policy. And that's why, again, the county and the cities, Paso Robles, I think, and Tascadero possibly, was on the verge of coming out for the JPA because of that very item. So this is an item, again, that I think each member agency has their own right to enforce separately other than the JPA. But it came down to the JPA using that vehicle, so to speak, to make other agencies comply. And that was the main reason, again, that we rejected it. And so, again, no further comment, Mr. Enns. I'm ready for a motion if you're ready anytime. We'll see where it's going to go.
I've got two more hands up, and then I think we'll be ready. Jeff Heller, please.
Thank you, Chair Enns. I just want to say I'm ready to make a motion when you're ready to accept one.
Okay, and I see one more, Scott Newton.
Yeah, I just like the state. I mean, I think the reason why the IWMA went to a state mandate only is everyone realized how fragile the IWMA is with the way the JPA is organized. And what I'd really hate to see happen is something like this be so divisive that it puts the whole organization in jeopardy. And, you know, the beauty is that each jurisdiction can put this ordinance in place on their own and the IWMA can continue to exist.
Chairman.
I'm sorry. Dawn.
Okay. Thank you so much. And I echo Scott's words about all of that, except that I do appreciate the callers and, you know, particularly those who study science from Cal Poly, who actually understand what millions and millions of particles means to the body as a planet, as well as to our human body, and that this noxious material is so costly to all of us. And yet we're debating about something. And on the other hand, there's only two cities here that haven't done it, and the county. So this is halfway done. And yet I know that, you know, pushing this further has the possibility of destroying the IWMA at this point, which is critically important as we move into these next mandates. And so it's, you know, trying to find the compromise with the clamshells and the cups was an effort to move forward. It wouldn't be that hard to do. And it actually probably could be pushed out until we get through COVID, and which way hopefully maybe then we would have a state mandate, but it would save a lot of heartache and expression here, both from many of our constituents, including all of our constituents, actually. And I mean, Mr. Storton's statements were so powerful and heartfelt, particularly because it's not really about us. It's really about our children and our grandchildren. And I just can't get that through to folks. And so it's like we talk about these things, and yet it's impossible to go any further because we see it so differently. And I just, it's hard to go back into the future, go backwards into the future. But that's exactly what I feel for those of us in the unincorporated area, because of the unincorporated area, with the exception of Pismo, who's passed a mandate already, is pretty much left to us and that in the county. And we don't have anything on styrofoam there. And that's where all the tourists are and where the impacts really hit. And so, you know, I was really hoping for a compromise here. And I just, you know, even to push this out, as Mr. Storton suggested, is where I would be very happy to support.
Okay, thank you. John Hammonds, you had asked first to make a motion. Jeff, I would defer to John if he wants to make that motion he asked first. If you had other comments, I'd be happy to listen to them now.
Other comments? I didn't know that was the rule, so
that's fine. Well, I'm just trying to follow a protocol here. John had asked.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Chair, what I would say to my colleagues here is that truly, we all understand polystyrene's issues. However, if it was so important, why is it not on 1383? This is, again, a major issue for me that they didn't address it at a state level, which is kind of where I've always been coming down, is that we need to enforce state mandates. So ask yourself why, then, that Senate Bill 1383 does not have styrofoam in it. So with that, I would make a motion at this point in time to bring back, and direct staff basically, to bring back a future agenda item that we would either amend or extend this moratorium for at least 1 year or repeal it at a future meeting. That would be my motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion to second, and I'll ask Jeff Heller, you had a comment you wanted to make, and I think now would be a good time.
Well, I was just hoping to move, kind of, let's get this thing done.
Okay.
Make a motion that we...
And if I might,
If I might, President, just to get clear on Mr. Hammond's motion, the motion would be to bring back at a future time an ordinance to amend the existing ordinance, potentially extend the ordinance, either amended or as is, or repeal the ordinance in its entirety.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor.
Okay,
there were, Jeff, just to make clear on that, there were three different items there. It did be make it a future agenda item. Could we just make sure we clarify that?
Yes, I think, please.
Mr. Chair, I think we have to, based on what Mr. Menery said earlier, we have to bring it back no matter what we do.
Yes.
And in that item, that we would discuss amending the ordinance to extend it for at least another year during the based on COVID issues, or repeal it at that point. That was the motion.
Okay. There were three parts to it. Bring it back, discuss at that time, amending the ordinance for potentially extending it, postponing it for 1 year, and possibly rescinding it at that time.
Mr. President,
is there any discussion?
Jeff, I just want to clarify the motion. Sorry. But what I'm hearing John Hammond say is two options. Not all three. Bringing it back and either extending it or rescinding it. Am I right, John?
That's correct. Basically, we have to come back for further discussion to do anything with the ordinance for what Jeff said. And in that, we would have an option to extend it for another year or rescind it at that point.
Okay, Ms. President Anz, if I might be clear then, is what Mr. Hammond's motion then is to bring back another ordinance that would repeal the polystyrene ordinance. And then that would be setting a hearing time for the discussion of to extend the existing ordinance.
Jeff, could we do that all in one item, or would it have to be?
I think it would be a discussion point, but it's very similar discussion to what you're having today.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So
under discussion, Mr. Chairman,
Bruce,
again, this sounds like options, either to repeal an ordinance, to repeal the existing ordinance, or a move to extend the existing ordinance. And I wonder if the motion maker is open to putting a third option on the table as it comes back, which is to amend the scope of the existing ordinance to expanded polystyrene only.
Well, that would be fine with me, Bruce. Again, that's, I think, in the discussion of the next time we get to this. I mean, that's going to get down in the weeds again.
Yeah. Well, we need to have that, you know, John, I would submit that we need to have that discussion. And the thing is, we're going to have to introduce an ordinance. And so what we're asking staff to do is, if you would accept my motion to consider amending the scope of the ordinance along with the other two options, which is to keep what we've got and extend it out a year, or rescind it. If you'll put that third option in there, I can support that. But that means that staff is going to have to bring us back three ordinances to introduce so that we can choose to move forward with one of them.
Yeah, I understand.
Mr. President, I would like to say, as the second, I would then withdraw my second, because we're back to square one where, again, we're trying to legislate through this body where different council members from different jurisdictions are coming in and legislating over areas that are far from their local jurisdiction. So for me, it's I was willing, I guess, to discuss an extension, but certainly not a continuance of creating different legislation.
And Mr.
Really,
Hammond,
what I'd like to see is this ordinance rescinded and taken up by each council and the Board of Supervisors individually.
We understand that. If you have that third option, Mr. Hammond, I'd be glad to be your second on it.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce. I personally don't have a major problem with that. Again, I hope that, again, that we can move forward with extending it because, again, this is really related more to the COVID issue. We should be talking about it at this point anyway because COVID's not over. That's bottom line. Understood. Number two, again, if we want to go into the weeds a little further this next time around, I mean, if it is important to other members of the council here, then let's go ahead and do that. We can open it back up again and get down further because I do believe the ordinance as written is really restrictive, more so than anything I've ever seen anywhere. And again, coming back to the 1383, where it's not mandated even in that level, then we can have that discussion further. But I would accept the third motion or third addenda, so to speak, to this motion, Mr. Minnery, if you can get that recorded.
Does council and staff understand the potential modification of Mr. Hammond's motion?
I will repeat my understanding of it. There will be three options at the next meeting or subsequent meeting. Number one, a draft ordinance to repeal the existing polystyrene ordinance. Number two, a draft ordinance to amend the current polystyrene ordinance to polystyrene only. Expanded polystyrene only, and the third option to extend the existing ordinance for 1 year.
Yeah, I would second that if that's your motion, Mr. Hammond.
That'll work for me. Thank you, Bruce.
Okay, let me just thank you for the clarification. Debbie Arnold, did you second the original motion?
No, I withdrew.
Did I hear you?
Bruce, yes. Okay. Second.
Okay, then we have a motion by John Hammonds, second by Bruce Gibson, and I'm open to discussion at this time.
Could I get some clarification, please? In regards to the extension for 1 year due to COVID, is that a decision if we were to concentrate on that issue only? Is that something that would require a subsequent meeting, or couldn't that be decided today? So, Mr. Minnery, if you could answer that.
I'm sorry, would you mind, am I muted? Sure. Would you mind repeating a question?
Yeah, real quick, just in regard to making an extension due to COVID, similar to what we did last year, that would not require another meeting by this body. That could actually be decided upon today.
You could extend the current ordinance right now today.
Correct. Okay. Just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. We have a motion. Any other comments? Seeing none, I'll ask Cheryl for a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Understanding my first was from Mr. Hammond. Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
No.
Mr. Burbeau?
He got kicked out of the meeting.
Okay. Okay, let me go on with roll call, and then we'll decide. I'll ask Mr. Minnery what we should do. Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
No.
Mr. Heller?
No.
Mr. Newton?
No.
Ms. Ortiz Lake?
Yes.
Ms. Pease?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
No.
Mr. Storton?
No.
Mr. Entz?
No.
Motion does not pass. We have 7 no's and 3 yeses, and we need to find out about Mr. Burbeau.
How many yeses did you count?
We have 4 yeses. We have 4 yes votes.
I counted 6 yes.
I counted five.
Okay, well, I'm so sorry. Maybe I misunderstood everybody. I'm sorry. I had our yes. It's Mr. Hammond, Mr. Gibson, and then going back to the roll call. A no for Ms. Arnold, a yes for Ms. Bright, a no for Mr. Heller, a no for Mr. Newton, a yes for Ms. Ortiz-Legg, a yes for Ms. Pease, a no for Mr. Pichon, a no for Mr. Storton, and a no for Mr. Enns. That's 5 yes votes. I'm sorry.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mr. President.
And 7 no's.
This is Charles. I got cut off my computer, and I think I've got back. If you can hear me, I'm back on my iPad. But I missed the discussion and the details of any amendments made to the initial motion. But it sounds like you've completed the vote and have a majority, so maybe I'm not needed.
Well, then, in that case, why don't you just abstain for now, and then we'll go from there.
Mr. President?
Yes.
Sounds like we need a motion that would pass, and I would like to move that we move forward with option number 3, which is staff's recommendation.
I will second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for option number 3.
And may I clarify
that
just once again, that option number 3 would be to bring back an ordinance to repeal the polystyrene ordinance. And then we would set a hearing date.
Yes.
Is that our mission?
Any more discussion? The motion is option number 3 to rescind the ordinance.
And let the individual jurisdictions decide.
It would be, I'm sorry, just to be clear, it wouldn't rescind the ordinance. It would bring back an ordinance to repeal the existing ordinance, and there would still be hearing for that and additional public comment.
Okay,
so not a final decision. That's why I'm clarifying by just saying option 3.
Yes.
Okay, any other board discussion?
Just for clarification, and I don't want to speak for Mr. Haler, but I believe you were procedurally going by the person that asked to make a motion in order, and I believe he was the second one, but I didn't know if he still had a motion to bring forward. But I'll leave that to Mr. Haler to decide, or you. I certainly are in charge of that.
Okay.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. A point of order, you have a motion and a second on the floor, and I'd like to call a question.
Okay. Cheryl, roll call vote, please.
Okay, I have a motion by Ms. Arnold and a second by Ms. Compton. Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Bright? Ms. Bright?
Sorry, no.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
No.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legg?
No.
Ms. Pease?
No.
Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
No.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
You didn't call me.
I'm sorry, who was that?
I was the second on the motion.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Compton. I thought I did call you. I'm so sorry.
So,
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
We have 7 yes votes and 6 no's. Motion does pass.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody. It looks like we'll get to discuss this again in the near future. So with that, we will move on to item number 11. It's a resolution to approve services with agreement with H&H Consultants. Brooks.
Thank you, President Enns. Just one point of clarification. I made a typo in the recommendation of $339,000. We went through multiple iterations of this, and it ended up being $329,000 is the contract that's in your packet. So it is 329, not 339. So as you know, SB 1383 is a rather large undertaking, and one of the biggest components of that is the franchise agreements. So just to give you an indication, we have 8 jurisdictions. We have a lot more than 8 franchises. For example, this is a picture of Slough County, which has 7 franchise zones. So there's 7 different franchises to negotiate just with the county. And then with the community service districts and several cities separating their garbage franchise, their franchises by the type of waste, garbage, recycling, and yard waste, we end up with approximately 20 or more franchises that need to be negotiated. And that is very comprehensive. For example, there are 23 pages of definitions in 1383 that have to be considered and compared with each of the franchise agreements. And then those have to be mapped throughout the agreement and your municipal codes and make sure alignment. There's got to be negotiation with your hauler to make sure that you agree to them providing the service. And it's rather, like I said, extensive process. And also, Rob Hilton is the main point of contact that we've had through this process on our strategic plan and will be if we move forward with this item. But I want to let you know that he's a part of a much larger firm. They have 13 senior managers and principals who are engaged in this type of work throughout the state. Their firm has 28 people currently employed. They're trying to hire 2 more right now, but they're extremely qualified to assist us. They were actually hired by the state to help draft some of the model franchises and ordinances, and the state used them to do most of the training that was done statewide on these programs. So they've been living and breathing this for about 5 years now. And additionally, they've been working with us for over a year on the strategic plan, so they know us and they know the partners that we're working with. And then remind you that the rollout is very comprehensive. This is the Gantt charts for the 5 different objectives we've got to get out done in the next year. So time is of the essence. And if you look at the actual cost, you break it down of $329,000, the bulk of it, $250,000 is to help the jurisdictions roll out or do their franchise negotiations and amendments and adopt the polystyrene, the ordinances, the 7 ordinances that have to be adopted. So most of the money is going to help the 8 jurisdictions do that. It comes in at less than or around $30,000 a piece. So it's not that expensive when you consider the amount of work that has to be done. $81,000 is all that really comes to IWMA, and that's to standardize all these franchise agreements and ordinances, help us with the procurements that each jurisdiction has to do. We also have to coordinate the capacity planning for all the jurisdictions and develop the edible food recovery program, which is over 70 core contracts for food recovery with food banks. So again, it's a huge undertaking that we have less than a year to do. So with that being said, I'll take it back to the board for questions and comments.
Okay, board member comments, please. Andy Pease, I see your hand up.
Great, thank you so much. And I I'm concerned about the size and scale of this particular contract. I understand that HF&H has done some great work and has already been able to provide some service, and obviously at the state level provide a lot of model tools, which will be very useful. My thought is, and my question is, if there, I appreciate the urgency of wanting to move forward, and then, you know, okay, so maybe we not going out to bid, I think it's also concerning, but in recognition of the time frame. So I'm wondering if there would be, if it would work to only act on the first phase of the proposal right now. I think that then the jurisdictions would have a better sense to be able to understand exactly what support they truly need and could then develop, participate in the scoping of that second part. And I think that would be a more responsible, more maybe a more responsible way to steward the public funds. And so I'm wondering, Brooks, if you could kind of comment on the feasibility of that type of approach.
I wouldn't recommend it based on how extensive the work that each jurisdiction has to do on these franchises and ordinances. We're going to help you provide you with a model that's tailored to meet what we're doing countywide, but it still requires your staff who are taxed with their normal jobs and who are probably not as tuned in to what's been going on in the franchise agreements. Only one jurisdiction out of the eight even has a solid waste employee. And so this is going to be a difficult task for them to wrap their heads around. It's going to be very taxing on their time. So I think it would be difficult if you could delay it. But again, I think it probably end up us costing us more money to try to get it done in a shorter time frame if we did that.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Brooks. And any further comment? Andy? Oh, sorry. There's Debbie.
Yeah. Thank you, Brooks. I just want to say, okay, to me, this is what IWMA was formed to do, or the JPA was formed to do. I know over at the county, any kind of ordinance would cost upwards of $500,000. And I believe you said there would be seven ordinances involved for each jurisdiction to adopt, along with all the rest of it. So for $50,000 or something a piece or whatever it is, but it's a much lower than what we are usually looking at when required to do an ordinance. I think this is a fantastic idea, and I appreciate you putting all this package together.
So Brooks, could you clarify the term of this contract in terms of what's the timeline? And the other one is, I understand it's a not to exceed contract. So could you speak to that?
Yeah, and you're correct. We hadn't had the term in there, so I would ask Mr. Hilton if he would comment on that.
Yes, I believe we drafted it based on a calendar year, concluding everything during 2021. The phase one support is a monthly support through the end of the calendar year. The franchise and ordinance work should be done by quarter three or early quarter four based on our Gantt charts.
Okay, thank you. And it is a not to exceed contract. Is that correct, Brooks?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And you said potentially we could do some of the work and maybe be able to control the costs.
We could potentially. I would just caution you that if, for example, we give a jurisdiction the documents that they need to review and we gave them 45 days to do that and it took them 60, and then we had to retain HF&H longer, it could potentially cost more money. And then the question would be, would IWMA pay that or would they hire a consultant or hire HF&H on their own?
Okay. Thank you for that. Other board comments?
Robert, I
Yes.
I don't see where to raise my hand on this device. Brooks, along the lines of what you were just talking about, can you describe other circumstances under which it would potentially cost more than the not to exceed amount, or which under which it could cost less?
No, we wouldn't go beyond, but the question would be if there was a delay somewhere within a jurisdiction on, you know, communicating the implications of an ordinance with an existing ordinance they already have, and those now have to align up. And if it took more time to negotiate that, or if there was a issue in their franchise agreement that nobody else had, and it took additional time to work on that, and we used HF&H, would that eat into the cost of everybody else's? So that's something that we haven't gotten into the detail of. I'm just giving you a ballpark that it would be about $30,000 allotted per jurisdiction. So Rob, would you care to comment on that as well? Am I phrasing that correctly?
Yeah, I think that is, I want to be clear, no, that is a not to exceed amount. There's nothing that's going to go over that in terms of the this contract and the authority's responsibility. As Brooks said, there may be things that individual jurisdictions want to negotiate that are outside of what 1383 requires. There may be things that you and your hauler have already been talking about, or you may have an unusual circumstance where you need to change other scope items. Anything outside the scope of SB 1383 would be the responsibility of that jurisdiction, either through their own staff or contracting with us separately to deal with those issues. In terms of things that may reduce the budget, the good news is Patty's already been hard at work working through the model franchise agreement that we did for the state to conform it to some of the decisions we've made locally. So I think she's saved us some time there, both budget time as well as schedule time. And then Brooks and I have talked about an approach to negotiating with the haulers that may carpool some of these costs and really achieve some efficiencies. So we're gonna try and leverage that, and that may cut down significantly on that large phase two task.
Thank you. And that latter part, I think, was something we discussed. Yeah. We asked similar questions in the executive committee meeting, and I thought that was a little reassuring that, you know, it's possible we could see some reduced costs. My concern was that a not to exceed amount, while it cannot be exceeded, if we haven't, you know, finished the project, if you will, due to some delay on the part of IWMA or a part of one of our member jurisdictions, that, you know, we'd be put in a situation of coming back and wanting to, you know, amend the contract to increase it. And that's what I was getting at when I, you know, was referring to potentially costing more. But thank you for your answer.
Okay. Andy?
Thank you. It also strikes me as unusual, just looking at the hourly rates and being somebody in the private sector, which I know it's different than the public sector, but the amount of hours being done at the highest and second highest rate seems unusual to me for this kind of work. And just the scale of the work. And I'm wondering if you've, I realize there's a sense of you want the best that, you know, maybe you gain some efficiency. And at the same time, it's a really big number and a lot of hours at these highest rates. I'm wondering if there's some thought that perhaps a redistribution of hours to be more responsive to kind of stewardship of public funds, and in recognition that the money comes from somewhere, right? We were talking about rate increases to our constituents. So just wanting to make sure we're being as careful and thoughtful as we can with this kind of large contract.
I believe we are. And I think two things. When we put the strategic plan out for bid, every vendor knew that we had budgeted $150,000 for that plan. We got five proposals that were all between $146,000 and $150,000. So regardless of where they broke down, what person filled what seat at what hourly rate, they all pegged the exact same number. And I think if we went out to bid for this service, being that hundreds of jurisdictions throughout California have 11 months to implement this, you would get the similar cost. And whenever I checked around with other jurisdictions, of what they were paying for just one entity, for example, a city or a county, and not a JPA of eight entities, they were in the $60,000 to $70,000 range. So for us to get this for around $30,000 an agency, to me, was a tremendous savings. I think this is as inexpensive as it gets. I also think, because time is of the essence here, we are getting one of the most premier experts in the state, and this is the really refined, precise language that we need to get right the first time. If we mess up some of these things in the ordinances or the franchise agreements, it could cost a lot more money to the jurisdiction, or it could have us redo this later a year from now, which would cost a lot more money and a lot more staff time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Karen Bright, you had a comment?
Yes, please. Actually, it's a question. That first graph that we were shown, that first table, I don't see that in any of the attachments. If I'm missing that. Yes.
This one?
That one, yes.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was in the last monthly meeting, the January meeting. We had the Gantt charts for this, I believe, or did we not show it?
The first one, that first one that you showed, I think. Nope. No, it was just before the,
You mean the one with the costs?
Yes.
Yeah, that's on the packet page 75.
Packet page 75. Okay.
It's a little buried.
Yeah. Yes, that's the one I'm after. Okay, that's on page 75. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's in sequence with the contract and the proposal, or the proposals in the contract.
Thank you. I'll find that. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. That was all.
Okay, any other board member comments? Motion would be in order for staff recommendation with the change in the amount of money to $329,040.
Excuse me, President Enns, if I may, did you want to take public comment before we go to a motion?
I have public comment written right here. Sorry. Thank you, Cheryl. Okay.
Yes, sir.
With that, I'll open the meeting to public comment. Barbara?
At this time, if a member of the public would wishes to make a comment on this item, you may select the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen, or if you are on the phone, you may dial *9. And I do have a caller. Okay, caller, you may be able to unmute yourself. You need to hit *6. There you are.
I have. Good afternoon. President Enns and board members, it's Ronald Crawl with North County Recycling and Composting. I wanted to comment on item number 11. As I heard the discussion earlier, certainly I think there's a high degree of passion in how we handle the recycling components and the waste streams we handle in the county of SLO. I wanted to make sure that as the authority and as the board considers this expenditure, clearly I think they need help, and I think the help coming from HF&H in some form or fashion or size makes good sense. In light of the time constraints, the 23 plus pages of definitions that the director mentioned, of course, 25 franchise contracts, and also the seven orders in SB 1383. With that, in addition to some additional help, like from someone of HF&H, I think there's also a need for the county to have leadership through the authority, the municipal and county leaderships, to identify, you know, a conduit in which way we can operate within the county with the assets we have developed, similar to the North County Recycling assets, and allow for them to work within not only conjunction with all the haulers, the 20 franchise contracts, but also the ability for us to be able to not only just meet the diversion requirements SB 1383, but also allow for the procurement requirements that come into place and the creation of that circular economy, which are so critical and why 1383 was passed. So I ask for your support, not only in some form or fashion of this expenditure, but in addition to that, to create a conduit that allows for the county to self-survive and to create that working conditions where the haulers, the leadership, and the association and the authority have the ability to jointly work together to not only just meet SB 1383, but to exceed it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Very nice comments. Thank you, Ron. Anyone else, Barbara?
I do not have anybody else for public comment.
Okay, then a motion would be in order from the board. Staff recommendation is there, spells out what we need to do, but we need to modify the number that's there to 329,040.
I'll move we adopt staff's recommendation with the amended dollar amount as indicated.
Thank you, Charles.
I'll second that. Debbie, second.
Thank you, Debbie. Motion and a second. Any other board discussion? Seeing none, Cheryl, roll call vote, please.
Yes, thank you. And I do have a motion with the amended dollar amount. Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton? Ms. Compton? Looks like we might have lost her. Okay, I will show her as absent. Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Ms. Pease?
No.
Mr. Pashon?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes, 10, one absent and one no. I'm sorry, 11 yeses, I'm sorry.
Ms. Compton had to take a call.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see Ms. Compton back in yet. Motion passes.
Thank you, Cheryl. Motion passes, and with that, we'll go to item number 12, revenue audit report and recommendation. Brooks?
Yes, and if you give me 1 second, my battery is dying, and I'm going to have to switch over to another speaker here.
No, not yet, Briggs.
Okay, apparently I can't switch over. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, we'll go as long as I can here. Okay, the next item is the R3 revenue audit. And just give you a little background on this. IWMA collects fees based on a 2007 rate resolution. We get about $2 million a year. It's from the three sources we mentioned before. The audit has never been done. And so we asked to go back 3 years to ensure that there were proper payments, that all the haulers and landfills understood the language and were paying similarly. And R3 was also to look at ways that we could fund SB 1383. So we did an RFP in 2019 and R3 was awarded the contract. And with that, I will turn it over to Rose Radford. Rose, did we keep you on this whole time?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to work on trying to get my microphone switched over.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, board members and members of the public. So Rose Radford with R3 Consulting, just going to present very briefly on the results of the revenue audit. In general, we found that the haulers and landfills were cooperative with our requests and provided the information that we requested. The total underpayment amount was less than 1% of the total fees paid. And that was really due to differing interpretations on how to calculate the fees owed, which was related to lack of clarity in the resolution language itself. To address that and also to find new revenue sources for SB 1383, we do suggest some adjustments to the fee structure. We agree with HFNH and Rob's statement that the 2% revenue basis is a sustainable funding source, and so we're in support of that. But some adjustments in some of the details of the resolution language would be beneficial. The first one would be paying on revenue net of fees. The current language kind of has two different interpretations of how that might occur. The second would be paying on the basis of billed revenue rather than collected revenue, which is the language now. One of the complexities of the current fee structure is that residential customers may either pay 30 cents or 2% depending on their amount of the bill. So that added some complexity on a monthly basis for the haulers to calculate the fees owed. We would suggest removing that by simply charging all residential customers that 2% amount across the board. We do recommend a periodic review of the fees payments, especially if there's an adjustment, just to confirm accuracy and that everyone's paying the fees on the basis of the language itself and in the same way. And just a final detail on that the resolution should address both the landfill and the hauler fees. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions. And Brooks, did you get that working?
I'm still on. It's okay. Telling me battery's low, but I can't charge it without plugging it in. It doesn't have a port. So I just was going to say there was one clarification point. The executive committee asked if we could disclose the dollar amounts, and so we're free to do that. The total overpayments that we're asking to refund is over the three-year period is $14,000. The total underpayment was $71,000 over a period of 3 years. And again, we're asking that not be collected because it was due to the confusion or the lack of clarity in our ordinance, or excuse me, in our resolution. And we would propose to send a clarification letter out to all the jurisdictions, and that would tide us over until we figure out the exact mechanism for funding SB 1383.
Okay, board questions?
I have a quick question, please.
Please go ahead, Keith.
Thank you. Brooks, on that clarification letter, will that immediately solve the problem and we should get the proper payments?
I believe so. At least it'll tide us over until we get the resolution written appropriately, and we will combine the landfill fees with 2% free fees into one resolution.
Okay, thank you.
Other board member comments, questions? John Hammond.
Jeff just asked the same question, basically. So, Brooks, this will make us whole. In other words, moving forward, it will collect enough revenue, on a 2% basis,
yes,
rather than a fee. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Yes.
That's all I had.
Okay, thank you, John. Karen Bright.
Thank you. Under the recommendations, it says periodically review fees to confirm accuracy. I believe on the last screen they had indicated that I don't think that there had been an audit, or so I'm just wondering what is the recommended time frame as to when you're going to review the fees again.
I think every other year we would do a 2 year prior audit. So we'll essentially audit every year, but we'll do it every 2 years.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, Jeff Heller, you had a question?
Thank you, Chair Enns. Brooks, in the background information here, I see that I know you've had a hard time getting information from many of the companies. And there are two companies, apparently, that you say were unresponsive and did not provide any information. What is your plan at this point to get the information that you need from these two companies?
We're going to go through our attorney, Jeff Minery, and have him draft a letter stating that we are going to pursue this information, and we will go to legal means if necessary, legal channels if necessary.
That answers my question. Thank you, Brooks.
All right. Thank you. Any other board member comments, questions? Seeing none, I'll open this to public comment. Barbara?
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press raise hand at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may hit star 9. I do have a caller. Okay, caller, you should be able to unmute yourself. And again, star 6.
Great. Yeah, hi, it's Ron Crawl again from North County Recycling. Just a quick comment, not to take any more time. It's been a long afternoon. And I believe Aaron Kardashian mentioned it also earlier from San Miguel Sanitation on the gross receipts being the calculus for the 2% fee, not the gross bill. So our concerns, of course, is as you kind of go through the process of billing this revenue, some items certainly are not collected and considered bad debt and never recovered. So on a gross receipts, it becomes a little bit clearer and cleaner versus a gross billed revenue. So I think I couldn't support or would ask that that be amended to continue as it is versus the gross receipts in place versus being gross on the gross billed revenue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Barbara, anyone else?
Not seeing any other public comment.
Okay, with that, I'll bring it back to the board. Close public comment. And ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair, can we address Ron's comment, Brooks? Does that language that we have in this account for that?
Yes, that's the direction that we're recommending. We're going to ask the haulers to pay us based on the 2% of what they collect, not on what they bill.
Exactly. That's fair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good observation there, John. Anyone else? Okay, I'm looking for a motion for staff recommendation.
So moved.
Hammond.
Gibson.
Hammond, we'll go ahead.
I have a motion from Bruce Gibson, second by John Hammond. Any other board discussion? Seeing none, Cheryl, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Ms. Arnold.
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau.
Yes.
Ms. Bright.
Yes.
Ms. Compton. Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Lake?
Yes.
Ms. Pease?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Starton?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, thank you. That concludes item number 12. Item 13, board member comments, future agenda items. Anyone wishing to comment? Seeing none, thank you everybody for your time. I'm sorry for such a long meeting, but we got a lot accomplished, I believe. So with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Ennis.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.